Show. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Hot diggity dog, I'm back home, I'm back in the studio, and gosh, it would be nice if I didn't think it was Tuesday or something, but darned if it isn't Friday already. But that's okay, because that means it's Friday on the front porch, on the horn, and I am, well, I got 3 days worth of show all bottled up inside of me to do in one evening. Actually, 4 days worth of show, because I won't be here Monday either. God, I remember when Johnny Carson used to make jokes about Mayor Yawkey never being in L.A. Yeah, I'm dating myself. I can say in my own defense that I heard those jokes because I was allowed to stay up late. I'm not as old as I think I am or seem. And in my heart, I'm 4 and a half. But anyway, no, I'm back. And tomorrow I'm gone again. This would be the program note part of the program. Now, I'm gone again tomorrow. I'm flying out to Salt Lake City to do some missionary work. Talk about mountaintop removal a little bit up at one of the nearby nearby hotels. There's a big meeting about waterways and rivers and streams and so forth. And I have the honor, the distinct and signal honor, of being on a panel to discuss mountaintop removal's impacts on streams and waterways and, yes, in fact, rivers. So it's fly out tomorrow, cringing and shaking, land in the land of Mormons. I'm under strict orders from Agnes to bring her back some magic underwear, but I think I'd get caught in the gift shop as soon as I mispronounced Kolob or the... You know, or ask them about the angel Nehi. Oh, that's Nephi. See? See the problem? But anyway, no. So I'm out tomorrow. The conference, actually, it's going on right now. But I'll be there for tomorrow, or get there tomorrow. Be there for the conference and panel on Sunday. And then I'm flying back on Monday. And that is going to be a milk run. I'm flying back Monday, and I think I get in somewhere around midnight at Charleston on a five-hour flight from Salt Lake City. A five-hour flight, a five-hour flight. Somebody, yeah. So I will not have a show on Monday, but the rest of the week should be as near to normal as anything on the horn can ever get. Normal, you will recall, as we were informed by the once and future world's greatest LGBT conversation radio host, Peter Godbold, is merely a setting on a dryer. So that's where we find ourselves this evening, with 3 hours and too much stuff to cram into all of it. And where to begin? How do I not begin here? Come on. Rand Paul is a gift. Rand Paul is absolutely a gift. You will recall when we left, we were discussing the fact that Rand Paul had suggested that the Americans with Disabilities Act was an unfair burden on the hard-working businessmen of America. And that if you had a building with two stories and you decided to hire somebody in a wheelchair, it would make far more sense to just give them an office on the first floor rather than have the government have a big old nasty law that would make you put a $100,000 elevator in to take him to the second floor. In an unrecorded portion of that same interview, Rand Paul went on to note that it would be environmentally sound if one had a visually challenged employee to simply turn the lights out in that office and save a little on energy, thereby saving more money for the hardworking businessman. If one had a hearing impaired employee, one could put that person in the noisiest part of the building, and the hearing impaired employee wouldn't mind. Or maybe we can just solve it all by bringing a chicken to the office. That's what I want. I want Sue Loudon to bring Rand Paul a chicken. Rand Paul is, after all, a physician. Yes, he's a doctor. He is Dr. Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist. Oh, it's almost a... It is. Look, guys, Saturday Night Live writing staff, well paid and all that, take Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist, and just run with it. This is weeks... And weeks of good serialized comedy at the expense and by the good graces of Dr. Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist. Ophthalmologist. Oh, dear. And now, of course, his daddy is out there saying, well, they're ganging up on my little boy. It's not fair. These are gotcha questions. Yeah, really, no kidding. No kidding. For a libertarian, and what's more, a Randian, for a Randian libertarian, otherwise known as freak, asking a question, which is really a gimme, which is really a no-brainer in 2010, asking the question... Dr. Paul, would you have voted for the Civil Rights Act of 1964? Anybody with a half a brain, anybody with any kind of conscience, anybody with any kind of knowledge of history goes, well, sure I would. Institutionalized racism is wrong. Not Rand Paul. No, because things that are gimme questions in the real world are gotcha questions for the weird-ass little freaks of libertarian Randland. I almost imagine them as like little munchkins. We represent the Ayn Rand philosophy. We represent the objectivists. No, because would you say, are civil rights laws good things? Well, that's a loaded question for a libertarian, because all laws for a libertarian are bad things unless they are protecting that particular libertarian's property. No, really. Dr. Paul, I've come to you to do my cataracts. I want to be able to see in my golden years.
Well, citizen, I see that you use that abominable socialist moocher program, Medicare. I, Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist, well, I cannot treat your cataracts because I am Rand Paul. Libertarian ophthalmologist.
Oh, wait.
I have an exception. Sir, I can accept your socialist government Medicare. For as Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist... Oh, dear, I feel some Daffy Duck coming on. Ophthalmologist... As Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist, I have stated in print, physicians should be allowed to make a comfortable living.
A comfortable living? No, really.
He said that. See, that's the way it is with all these Randians and these libertarians. They don't want it. No, I don't need no laws. I just and don't want no handout. Gonna pull myself up by my princely libertarian, libertarian bootstrappings. Unless said principled libertarian happens to make half of his income off of the dirty, filthy socialist program, to wit, Medicare. Which Rand Paul does. My campaign's going to be all about federal spending and the Tea Party message. Republicans need to regain our believability as fiscal conservatives. And then comes this. From a Wall Street Journal story. But on Thursday evening, the ophthalmologist from Bowling Green, Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist from Bowling Green. But on Thursday evening, the ophthalmologist from Bowling Green said there was one thing he would not cut, Medicare physician payments. In fact, Paul, who says 50% of his patients are on Medicare, wants to end cuts to physicians' payments. In other words, he wants more socialized medicine money. Wants to end cuts to physician payments under a program now in place called the Sustained Growth Rate, or SGR. Quote, physicians should be allowed to make a comfortable living. And you know, that's what I've figured out here. I mentioned Daffy Duck a minute ago. These teabaggers, these Randians, and so forth, well, they are. They are all. They're all Daffy Duck. They are. They are all Daffy Duck, to wit.
Hey, what do you know? He's colder than a foundered flounder. Come on, let's get out of here before he comes to. Take your hands off of me. I came up here to get those solid gold goodies, and I ain't leaving without them. On account of I am greedy. Oh, brother.
Really? Libertarians and Randians and Rand Paul, they're not following, they're following the principles of Daffy Duck. Paul, you want to challenge me? I got more evidence, baby.
You know, sometimes I wonder whatever happened to that silly duck. It's a living.
Yeah, it's a living. Because, after all, as Rand Paul said, physicians should be allowed to make a comfortable living. So, henceforward, let's build a meme, you know, as you tweet, as you Facebook, as we all do this sort of thing, as we talk to our friends and neighbors. There's nothing high-minded and philosophical about libertarianism. Oh, hell no. It's all Daffy Duck. It is. Really. Not kidding. I can prove it.
Claims we can eat.
Nope. You went too far. Here we go.
Open sarsaparilla. Open Saskatchewan.
Well, here we are, Pismo Beach and all the clams we can eat. What a way for a duck to travel. Underground. Hey, wait a minute. Since when is Pismo Beach inside a cave?
I wonder, you know, I just bet we should have turned left at Albuquerque. And then maybe a right turn at La Jolla.
Hey, wait, did you hear Bugs? I feel so much better now. He said La Jolla. I am in good company.
Well, we can't be too far off. So if we,
It's mine, you understand? Mine! All mine! Get back in there! Down! Go! Mine!
The libertarian platform in a nutshell, let's revisit that, friends and neighbors. Here we go. Daffy has just seen all the gold in Alibaba's cave.
Far off. So if we,
It's mine, you understand? Mine! All mine! Get back in there! Down, down, down! Go, go, go! Mine, mine, mine!
What's up, Duck?
Comfortably well off. I'm Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist. And physicians should be comfortably well off.
Woohoo!
Open septuagenarian? Open the saddle soap?
But see, libertarians get in trouble. And then all that high-minded, principled libertarian, my own bootstraps, goes right out the window when the hits the fan. You know, when Hassan Chop shows up with the big sword.
You open sesame?
I'm in for money, not just money.
Housing bubble, anyone?
Call me a cab, boy, and be quick about it. I'm a heavy dipper.
Sounds just like a libertarian, doesn't it? Because suddenly, that free market that was making them comfortably well off suddenly isn't. And then, well, they want help.
Quick, quick, save me, pal! And it's yours! It's gorgeous, isn't it? Don't be afraid. Have it appraised anyplace.
Hassan Chop!
Yeah, well, Chop the rabbit. He brought us here.
See? All those years ago when my father and I sat, he home from a hot silicon furnace, stripped down to nothing but his underwear in the morgue-like confines of our living room that were frozen cold. And I, young elementary school student that I was, watching my afternoon Bugs Bunny cartoons. And Dad, for reasons that would not become clear to me until much later, is laughing just as hard as I am, no matter how many times they play. Because it's real. Because these aren't cartoon characters anymore. These are actual Republicans. Daffy Duck is a Republican. Bugs Bunny, you know, he's an FDR Democrat, really. Now, I know I'm going a little far afield with this because I hate nothing more than the semi-scholarly attempts to prove that things that aren't scholarly are.
The economic and political social ramifications of Little Red Riding Hood.
You know? But I think I got one here. I really do. I think I've got one here.
Hassan Chop!
Yeah, well, Chop the rabbit. He brought us here.
Remember when the housing bubble broke? You remember that? You remember how the right wing, Flush Flimball, Hannity, you know, all the back, all the filth merchants said, well, the housing bubble happened because all of those useless poor people took advantage of the poor little lenders. Well, chop him.
Hey, Jeannie, the light brown hair.
Oh, mighty genie.
Release me, and I shall grant thee a rich reward.
He's lying! Chop him! Chop him!
Hassan, release you, oh master!
Chop him! Chop him!
I'm convinced of it. Daffy Duck is a libertarian. Without a doubt. And, well, you know, the fact of the matter is, we're the ones that are getting, you know, chop them! You know, if we'll only end all these entitlements, say the libertarians and the teabaggers. If we'll only end all these entitlements, all these government socialist programs, well, we'll all be comfortably well off. Yeah. One more little piece of evidence, if you don't mind. Just one more little piece of evidence. Because it's so twoo. It's twoo. It's twoo. It's wee-wee, wee-wee twoo. Namely, this.
Is he gone? Yeah, I got rid of him. Oh, boy, I'm rich!
And see, that's what they do! Is he gone? And the rest of us, normal people, not absolutely sociopathically eaten alive by greed. Yeah, I got rid of him. I fixed the problem. I mean, is this the transition from the Clinton administration to the Bush to the W. Bush administration? You remember when George Bush left office and the economy was in the toilet? And Bill Clinton and the Clinton administration, for all of its many faults, and we're not going to do those right now, tried to pull pieces of Humpty Dumpty back together again, and wound up with a massive expansion of the economy, the people working, jobs, all of that stuff. Bill Clinton got to the end of his 8 years. Daffy Duck, in the form of the Republican Party, libertarians, the soon-to-be teabaggers, poked their little heads out from under Bugs' hand. Are they gone? Yeah, I got rid of them. And what do? Right back to the same old crap. Absolutely, right back to the same old crap. Is he gone? Yeah, I got rid of him. I'm rich! I'm socially secure! I'm comfortably well off! So, just bear that in mind as the weeks and months go forward and we learn more about the filthy, spidery, snaky little place that is the inside of the mind, or what passes for one, those thin gray settlings between his ears, of Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist. Just. Rand Paul, candidate for Senate. Yeah, Rand is tired, and see, this is the one that really slayed me. And you know, look, we talk about Rand Paul, but it's not just Rand Paul. He's actually out there stupidly saying what all those freaks think they actually believe, until such time as Hassan starts to chop them and they yell, "Save me." And that is that everything would just be great if we would just let the market run wild. You know, as in BP, as in coal mining, as in mountaintop removal, as in everything. What do I mean by that? Well, you know, I don't just say things. I'll make this real for you. In this particular instance, whether you realize it or not, Rand Paul, has demonstrated a profound lack of understanding of almost 700 to 800 years of culture, And by culture, I don't mean opera, which I hate. No, Rand Paul interviewed on ABC News' Good Morning Today. Good morning, George Snuffleupagus, you know. George Snuffleupagus asked him about what's going on the Gulf Coast. This matters. Because there's BP sleazily trying to weasel out of its responsibilities. And look who the libertarians, the teabaggers, and the repiglickens, etc., look whose fault it is. No, really, not kidding.
Let's move on, because you also said something.
I know, and I've answered you. I've answered you.
Okay, that's why I want to move on.
Fair Housing Act.
Okay. Oh, he's almost as bitchy as his father.
Network on January 22nd, 2010, you talk about government regulations and what you think should happen with government regulations. Take a look.
Get rid of regulation, get the EPA out of our coal business down here, get OSHA out of our small businesses. We need to restrain government to let small businesses and businessmen and women create jobs.
So I want to see how far you would push that belief. You know, the front page of USA Today this morning, we've been talking about it. EPA tells BP to use less toxic chemicals. Do you believe the EPA should not be allowed to tell oil companies they can't use certain chemicals to enforce safety regulations on that rig out there?
No.
The rig that apparently professional media journalist George Snuffleupagus has not been told sank and killed 11 people. Because we're not talking about that.
What I was referring to with the EPA is I find it particularly galling that the EPA puts out a press release and says that if Congress doesn't do anything about greenhouse emissions, that they will. I think that's a regulatory commission run amok, and I think we need to have congressional oversight. I don't think regulatory agencies should write regulations without approval of the people through their representatives. And I stick to that, and that's absolutely my point of view.
But you don't want to get rid of the EPA?
You know, he might learn to regret saying, I stick to that, and that's my point of view, kind of the way that Sue Loudon quickly found herself backing away from what she said she wasn't going to back away from. I believe, bring a chicken to the doctor, and I'm not backing away from that position. Now she's backing away from that position by saying she never said it. But, you know, the same thing applies with Dr. Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist. Just.
No, the thing is that, you know, the drilling right now and the problem we're having now is in international waters, and I think...
Okay, it's in international waters, so we're going to find out whose fault the BP disaster is. And Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist, just, we can count on him that he won't blame BP because, BP, it's BP.
There needs to be regulation of that, and always has been. I think there are hundreds of pages of regulation. What I don't like from the president's administration is this sort of, you know, I'll put my boot heel on the throat of BP. I think that sounds really un-American in his criticism of business.
I think that sounds really un-American. Rand Paul has just referred to Barack Obama as un-American. Add this to the list of I think he hates white people that Glenn Beck gave us. Glenn Beck, by the way, formally inking a deal with the teabaggers. He's a contract partner now with FreedomWorks. I think that sounds really un-American in his criticism of business. Do you realize that Rand Paul just basically accused the President of the United States of heresy because Rand Paul's religion is business? I think that sounds really un-American in his criticism of business.
I've heard nothing from BP about not paying for the spill.
Oh, okay. Well, because you've not heard it, they didn't say it. Wow. We're back to that. If the tree falls in the forest and there's nobody to hear it, does it make a sound? If BP tries to weasel out of paying for the hell and damnation it's released on planet Earth, but Rand Paul didn't hear it, it didn't happen? Really? You want it? Wow.
And I think it's part of this sort of blame game society in the sense that...
Wait, okay. Now, there's more code. Whenever you hear a right-wing repiglickin talking about the blame game, it means that they've been caught out again. George Reekers hires a rent boy. We don't need to play the blame game. $8 billion go missing in Iraq. The Bush administration says we don't want to play the blame game. The Gulf Coast winds up under hurricane-driven waters, and the Bush administration says we don't want to play the blame game. And so now Rand Paul has elevated it to an entire social phenomenon. Really.
Really un-American in his criticism of business. I've heard nothing from BP about not paying for the spill. And I think it's part of this sort of blame game society in the sense that it's always got to be someone's fault. And
okay, stop there. I think it's part of this sort of blame game society in the sense that it's always got to be someone's fault. I hope you will take my word for it, but of course, if you do not wish to, you may consult a lawyer, which I am not, or you may yourself go to law school. Go long enough to sit down in torts class first year, first day of the first week of the first semester. Then quit law school. But on the first day of torts class, you will hear a principle announced. It is one of the oldest principles in the legal structure that forms the very underpinnings of our entire society. Whether it's BP turning loose umpty gajillion gallons of crude into the Gulf, or whether it's Massey Energy pursuing a course of production that puts profit ahead of human lives, or any other thing that nefarious and predatory business and kleptocapitalists have imposed upon us and tried to for all of practical human history, or at least Anglo-American history, yeah. To wit. And this goes back to a case. I'm going to be boring for a moment. Although it's not really boring. It's fascinating. Way, way, way back in the dark, dim mists of time when everything was in black and white and people said forsooth a lot. A case came before the King of England. I forget which king. But it was a long time ago. Like hundreds of years. And the court, the king... Well, the court and the king were the same thing. The king being the court being the king, and the king being the last word in the law. What had happened was two of the king's soldiers had been practicing their sword fighting. And, of course, back then, you practiced your sword fighting and you didn't have a wooden stick sword or anything. You practiced with your real sword. It could get a little messy. And one soldier grievously injured another soldier. And the injured soldier, who couldn't soldier anymore, brought a case against the soldier who cut him in practice. And it found its way before the king. And on the one hand, you've got the guy, you know, it's only a flesh wound, you know, with a stump hanging. And he says to the king, he cut my bleeding arm off. See, still bleeding. And the other guy says, but I didn't mean to. And the guy who got his arm lopped off is said, but I'm still out an arm. And the other guy said, but really, I like him. We drank ale together and had Skittles. I didn't mean to. Don't make me pay for it. I didn't mean to. And out of that case comes an ancient, ancient principle, one of the very bedrocks of the common law that has stood us good for way over nearly, well, way over a quarter of a millennium and damn near half of one. Or over a half a millennium. See, I'm doing math on the fly again. But that ancient legal principle is this. Learn it well. It's not hard to remember. But, and you want to write it down or something, have it handy for the next time you hear some godless, soulless, miserable the corporate apologist, Republican, libertarian, Randian say the following: I don't believe we should be playing the blame game. We have this blame game society in the sense that it's always got to be someone's fault. Well, that's because it does. That's because the underpinnings of our entire legal system, which Rand Paul would apparently overturn anew. And I've got a clip from Glenn Beck this evening along the same lines. It is an ancient legal principle. And it goes like this. All liability is based on fault. All liability is based on fault. Six words. All liability is based on fault. Fault is the measure of liability. Now, once we establish liability, we'll figure out what you're liable for. But fault is the basis of liability. And so, between the two guys, the guy who said, look, I got a stump. And the other guy who said, but I didn't mean to turn it into a stump. The king looks at him and says, yea, verily, and forsooth. Oath. I did not ask thee if thou meant to. I asked thee if thou did. And thou didst say thou did. So thou art at fault. So thou art liable. And, you know, good little libertarian that he was, the guy who was liable wandered away going, but I didn't mean to. And to this day, they say, I didn't mean to. Any mother who has ever dealt with a 3-year-old or a 4-year-old or a 5-year-old who did something that said 3, 4, or 5-year-old was not supposed to do, knows this basic principle because it's just a fundamental principle of fairness at her very core. Little Johnny reaching for the cookie jar that has been deliberately placed out of little Johnny's reach because little Johnny is prone to fill up on cookies and then won't eat his damn broccoli. Little Johnny's reach exceeds his grasp, and he can get his little grubby 5-year-old little Johnny mitt into the cookie jar, but in trying to get the cookie, he drags the cookie jar over off the shelf and it shatters into a million pieces on the floor. And when confronted about it, little Johnny says, after first protesting that he did not do it, then falls back to the what he perceives to be, in his little 5-year-old mind, the ultimate defense. But Mommy, I didn't mean to. And it doesn't wash. And Mommy sits there as she picks up the little pieces of the cookie jar so that little Johnny won't cut his little feet when he comes in to try to get more cookies again. Explains, honey, I know you didn't mean to, but I'm still not going to let you have a cookie. Because even though you didn't mean to, you did break the cookie jar, and it is your fault. And so here we see this same tired crap being played out anew and afresh among the weirdos of the teabagging right, whose current darling is Dr. Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist, just. So let's pick up where we left off, where he's explained the blame game. Now let's find out what happens as a result of the fact that Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist, just is not going to play the blame game.
Instead of the fact that maybe sometimes accidents happen, I mean, we have...
Before he goes here, I'm going to tell you to sit down. I don't tell you anything. I'm going to ask you to sit down. Because this is going to make you sick. You might want to have some sort of little emesis base in handy, because this is really going to piss you off. Had it not been broad daylight, I would have run naked screaming in the yard, tearing at my hair when I first heard this. And I expect it to be no different for you. So let's go back and let's get it all in place.
Got to be someone's fault. And instead of the fact that maybe sometimes accidents happen, I mean, we had a mining accident that was very tragic, and I've met a lot of these miners and their families. They're very brave people to do a dangerous job, but then we come in and it's always someone's fault. Maybe sometimes accidents happen.
See, I'm still not okay with that. I am fighting the urge to scream. I got an email a few minutes ago saying, Bob, don't spend an hour on Rand Paul, because there's much more important stuff going on. But the thing is, the questions surrounding BP, the questions surrounding Massey, the questions surrounding everything that is wrong in this country, the question of whether or not we will ever fix them is answered by whether or not the American people will buy in to the manure-filled bag of goods that this freak Rand Paul is purveying. Did you hear that? That's not a rhetorical question, because having heard that the first time, I said, no, I didn't say it, and I went back and I played it again. And you're sitting there with your little head in your little forehead and your little hands going, he didn't just say that. He did not just say to the families of two miners killed in Kentucky that sometimes shit happens. He didn't just do it, but he did. He did, he did, he did. I think it's part of this sort of blame game society, in the sense that it's always got to be someone's fault. That's only because it always is. But who the hell am I? I'm rational. Instead of the fact that maybe sometimes accidents happen. I mean, we had a mining accident that was very tragic, and I've met a lot of these miners and their families. Well, okay, if you've met them, Rand, then all right, that's fine. They're very brave people to do a dangerous job, but then we come in and it's always someone's fault. Maybe sometimes accidents happen. You know what? The next story I expect to find is that Rand Paul and Don Blankenship have been caught in bed somewhere. Rand Paul, you're my kind of guy. I got a lot of money I'm going to give you now that Citizens United case is open the barn door for me. Baby, I am going. Oh, it's going to be like a Las Vegas strip joint, and I'm going to be like a strong safety, and I'm just going to rain money on your naked body, Rand Paul, saying things like that. Maybe sometimes accidents happen and miners just die. Ooh, I love you, Rand Paul. I want to kiss on you. I have a sneaking suspicion that Rand Paul is a moron. No, really. One of those dangerous ones. And this is only the beginning of the program. Maybe sometimes accidents happen. And when accidents do happen, like they happen in the Gulf, well, that brown man in the White House is clearly an American.
Ow!
No. It's un-American to criticize business. My God. Whose medical school did this guy attend? It's un-American to criticize business? please, can we please, all of us work together, pool our psychic energy or whatever, and just drive this freak into the ground, back in, into the antediluvian depths from which he arose? You know, him and Pat Toomey, who will be facing Joe Sestak in November in Pennsylvania. Pat Toomey's another one of these antediluvian types. You want to see the end of America? You give Rand Paul his way. He'll be standing up with his bootstraps collecting your tax dollars. That's where we are. Yeah, from our pal Marty. Oh, go ahead and vent on Dr. Paul. Don't hold it back and bear the pain. I can't. It's astonishing. I mean, it can't be this can't be real. None of our founding fathers would behave like that. No one with a conscience would behave like that. But Rand Paul actually has to think about a question of whether or not he would have supported the Voting Rights Act? Rand Paul says it's un-American to criticize business, even when the business being criticized isn't American? Who? It's going to be an interesting evening. But you know what? Why are we surprised? Rand Paul's got his. And screw the rest of us. I'm going to come back. We'll go to the phones. We'll carry on conversations. We'll carry on in general. Who knows what we'll do. This is Friday on the Front Porch on the Horn. I'm Bob. You know how it all works here. You know the numbers. 877-443-2366. 877, the numeral 4, head on. And on your nickel, 304-658-3333. We'll be back.
Alice had a baby, and he looked just like I did. We got married on a Monday, and I've been working ever since. Every week down at the Ford plant, but now they're shutting down. Goddamn Reagan's in the White House, and nobody gives a damn. Double-digit unemployment, TVA be shutting soon. While over there in Huntsville, putting people on the moon. So I took to running numbers for this man I used to know. And I sell a few narcotics, and I sell a little bit. I'm getting rich now, but I'm getting more than buy. It's tough to make a living, but a man's just gotta try. If I die in Colbert County, would it make the evening news? Would you be blowing rockets and people on the moon?
5 minutes of a drive-by trucker's song than there is in every word that Rand Paul has ever spoken or considered speaking. And that's a fact. Email in from our buddy Corey in Louisville, who refers to Louisville as home of future Senator Jack Conway. I swear, every time Rand Paul opens his mouth, another Jack Conway ad comes out. Now, if there was any possibility that those pea brains in East by God, Kentucky, were still going to vote for Liberty Christ in this election, he just lost the Eastern Coalfields and the Western Coalfields. And notice that Conway hasn't said much of anything yet, which leads me to believe that even if Jack Conway wasn't told by his campaign to mention Paul's views on the Civil Rights Act on Hardball, little St. Rand Paul of the Libertines was set to implode on day 3 of the campaign instead of day 2. Says Corey, y'all get your popcorn ready. Hear, hear. Back before I said it, but I hadn't seen it yet because the email just goes here. Our pal Marty says, get OSHA out of business? A man for Don Blankenship's alleged to exist heart. You know, I just don't want to think about the porn movie that would be Don Blankenship and Rand Paul. Not because it's a pair of guys, but because it's a pair of monsters. Who wants to watch monster sex? But Lord, don't you think if they didn't think anybody was looking, hoo-wee! To the phones we go. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hi there.
Hey, Susan, what's up?
My thoughts as far as Massey and Paul go, who's on top?
See, now you're going to burn my little eye, but my little inner third eye there. It's burning right now. I got no third eye Visine for it.
That was the first thing that popped into my head when you mentioned that was, oh, God. I know, I'm bad. My reason for calling in is, and I'm going to do a little Obama bashing here, the Gulf and what's not happening.
Okay.
Well, we don't expect BP to do anything, let's face it, except cover it up. But you should have expected the government to start doing stuff. And don't let them con you in, you know, when you hear one thing that's driven me absolutely bonkers has been a bunch of uniforms going on about how they can't get down there. That's just crap. We have manned deep-sea submersibles who can get to the bottom of the Marianas Trench, and they're owned by the U.S. Navy. Why aren't they in the Gulf?
And that's a, well, I got another question for you, Susan. Why hasn't the Red Adair thing been done on this well? Blow it up. Don't ever try to pump it.
Okay, the thing with the...
Because you know the answer to that.
Okay, here, I actually do have an answer to that. When you blow a well, when you have a well on fire and you blow it out like Red Adair did, the reason you did that was you blew it out so that you blew out the fire. And then it would continue to gush, but it gushed oil, and then you could cap it. You didn't, blowing it up did not stop it. It just killed the fire so you could go in. And
but in this instance, blowing it up would collapse it, and it would stop it.
But that may or may not be. I don't know. But I do know that we have people who can go down there and find out firsthand what to do. They're not doing it.
No, they're trying to figure out a way to get the oil. That's the whole thing with all of this, Susan. That's what makes it so sickening. I'm not lecturing or anything. BP, the entire accounting division of the Bastard Petroleum is sitting there saying, "Well, okay, we're losing money right now, but if we can just get it under control, we'll still be pumping, and we'll recap all of our losses inside of a quarter." And that's where BP is. BP needs a boot on its neck.
Yeah, they had a great big monster spill in the Middle East. And what they did was the oil companies brought in all these super tankers and basically sucked up all this oil and seawater. And then they separated it out and sold us the crude.
Right, and you know, the Costner thing. Have you been reading about that?
Yes, I have. And it's a damn good idea, you know, a great idea.
But it still gives the crude back to BP. Dumb bastards need to be punished for this.
Where I'm going with, you know, saying Obama bashing is Obama should have taken one look, said, "Okay, I'm declaring an emergency. BP, you're out of here," except to cough up major, major money. We are taking over, and then just hand it over to someplace like Woods Hole or someplace, somebody like that. Ever heard of Alvin?
Sure. Works with Theodore and Simon, right?
No.
Oh, different Alvin.
Alvin is a deep sea man submersible. He worked on the Titanic, which is...
Oh, I know. I live with too many small children in my house right now. I'm also trying to learn the names of the three Chipettes.
Okay.
One of whom my family is mad at me for having noted looks like Sarah Palin.
Oh, okay. By the way, Alvin is owned by the United States Navy. Why isn't it in the Gulf?
Well, why are
there no boats there?
Right, where's the commentary? I've been reading quite a bit about it, Susan. Where's the commentary from Robert Ballard? I mean, you talk
Ballard.
Titanic, you mean Robert Ballard. He's the guy from Woods Hole that got the contract with the Navy to go down and look for the submarine, and they said, "Yeah, and while you're down there, you can look for the Titanic too, if you go look for the submarine first."
Yeah.
Robert Ballard is the expert. Where's Robert Ballard?
Huh? And he's not talking. I don't know why. But we have a whole fleet of these deep sea submersibles. And one of them, I know for a fact, has been at the bottom of the Marianas Trench. Oh. And it don't get any deeper than that.
That's true. Now, the question is, can you rig one of those things to do something once you get to 5,000 feet? And I'm not, just for the sake of devil's advocacy.
It's a man submersible.
Right. But you can't let the men out to cap the well.
That's true.
It has to be equipped with tools and robot arms and stuff like that, and welding torches or whatever. I don't know the particulars. But the other thing I would like to put to you is that, well, you know, I'm pro government intervention. I'm pro regulation. I believe that government can save us from those predatory sons of bitches, whether they be coal
coal operators or oil drillers or what have you. You know, genetic modifiers at Monsanto. All of them. That's the only thing that stands between us and their predatory impulses.
Exactly.
But if we go in, if the federal government says, screw it, we're fixing this, it's over, then from that moment forward, every problem that happens, BP's army, and I do mean army, I don't mean company, I don't mean platoon, I don't mean battalion, I mean army
of
lawyers says, well, that's the government's fault. We were on the way to fixing it.
Right. Uh-huh. And there's another thing I want to know. Why hasn't the U.S. government shut down those other rigs? Atlantis is drilling even deeper, and it's apparently basically put together with spit and
toilet paper,
sealing wire, and a whole bunch of duct tape.
Yeah, but the answer to that, again, Susan, is because our government is ruled by the concept of profit. You know, the only difference between Rand Paul and what he said and the reality is that Rand Paul said it out loud. Rand Paul said it is un-American to criticize business.
Well, here's
Rand Paul had to say it that way, Susan, because Rand Paul's not a religious man. Now, Kentucky's going to find that out, and it's not going to work to his favor when they find out that he's a, you know, one of them evolutionists. even though he's a fetusite, apparently. But anyway, Rand Paul couldn't say it's heresy or blasphemy because he came as close to it as he could when he said it's un-American to criticize business.
Yeah. Well, here's another little factoid. The oil, kills, plankton.
Oh, I don't doubt it.
Want to know how much oxygen is produced by plankton on the planet?
How much?
70% of the world's oxygen is produced by that little one-celled organism. So if BP and its pals manage to kill the seas, they kill us.
And that's why some people are saying that this thing is an extinction event.
This is just...
Oh, by the way, Matt Osborne of OsborneInc.com letting me know that he refers to it as your dose of deep-sea geekery, because Matt's into this kind of stuff, too. Alvin was retired in 2008.
Oh, it was?
Mm-hmm.
I know that they've got another one. I don't know if it's the same name, but it's basically...
Yeah, and you know, let's bear this in mind, because I just got a note from David in Tennessee, you know, and it makes a lot of sense. He says leaks are prevented before they happen. BP refusing to put that $500,000 that 500 large third level shutoff valve is what put all this in motion. BP spends 500 large on that well, this doesn't happen. And for all the impulses to blame the Obama administration and MMS and all of that crowd. This really is Cheney's Chernobyl.
Yeah.
I got a story sitting here, Susan. It's a brief one, and it's otherwise largely meaningless. And it has to do with a kerfuffle. I do so love that word. Has to do with a kerfuffle over something that went down in the Interior Department. Headline, oil regulator apologizes for drill baby drill cake. Earlier this week, Secretary of Interior Ken Salazar announced a reorganization of the Minerals Management Service, which had been rife with corruption and incompetence. MMS would be split into three different offices. Shortly after Salazar's announcement, John Gall, the head of the Alaska MMS office, called an all-hand staff meeting to eat a cake decorated with the words, drill, baby, drill. And he has now expressed regret for that.
Yeah.
Now, here's the point. The MMS did not get, and I'm not in the Obama apology business. But like I said, I have a fundamental understanding of that phrase, all liability is based on fault.
Mm-hmm.
And
the Cheney energy meeting.
You know, and again, I've referred to it a couple of times. Do you remember that, I can't remember which publication it was, but the Cy Hirsch piece about Dick Cheney having placed moles all over the executive branch?
Yeah.
There's the investigation that needs to be done of MMS. How many of the people who were involved in all the filth with MMS are Bush administration appointees or elevations or hires?
Mm-hmm.
Because what you know, you've got an awesome opportunity with this thing to root out some of Dick Cheney's moles and prove the truth of Cy Hirsch, of what Cy Hirsch said.
Right. Now, on a lighter note.
See.
You keep hearing about how the Republicans are going to take back Congress because this is an anti-incumbent mood and da-da-da-da-da. However, let me give you some insight into the one primary that nobody bothered to report on.
Okie dokie.
The primary in Oregon. The entire delegation was primaried. They all won by a minimum of 80%.
All the incumbents.
All of the incumbents. Most of them went back, won by in the 90s. This is the entire progressive. They're all progressive, and guess what? They weren't even running commercials. The only commercials being run in this area were for Portland City Council and that type of thing. There were no statewide office commercials at all. And they still won by huge, huge margins because when it's progressive, there is no anti-incumbent rage. It's get your ass back to work.
Yeah, it's the blue dogs.
Yeah, because we don't have blue dogs. DeFazio? Blumenthal? Oh, come on. Merkley? Well, Merkley wasn't running, but Wyden was.
And were there Republican primary opponents? I mean.
Well, yeah, but, this is a closed primary.
I know, but I realize that, but I mean, so Republicans had a primary too, obviously.
Yeah.
And that's where the teabaggers threw their support.
Yeah. So it's going to get, the commercials will come out for the general election, but you can bet your bippy probably the entire delegation is going to be sent back.
But you see, the right wing would respond to that. That's Oregon there. Bunch of granola eating, yogurt.
Yeah, well, I know
freaks.
These people, yeah. And they're losers. They're losers.
they're
chronic candidates and, that type of thing. And basically, in this state, you mention their name comes up and you hear quiet snickers. But it's a kind of an add-on to Joe Sestak's win. Because there was, progressive turnout. There's no rage against progressives. It's rage against blue dogs. And it's rage against the corporatist.
Well, the teabaggers aren't raging against the corporatists. Our side's mad at the corporatists. That's what happened with Sestak. That's what happened in the John Murtha primary.
Yeah, and what happens is we promptly turn out in huge masses, and
And that's the other thing, Susan. Turnout was abysmal.
Turnout was abysmal.
And so if you get out, if Democrats and liberals can actually get out the vote, we'd make a difference.
Yeah.
And that's, of course, that's the biggest, biggest if of all. Because it bears remembering, low voter turnout always inures to the benefit of Republicans. High turnout inures to the benefit of Democrats. Hey, Susan, five other lines blinking, so I got to get to them. But good to hear from you, dear.
Good to hear from you, and glad to have you back.
For at least a day. Then we'll have semi-regular week next week. All right. Take care, Susan.
Bye-bye.
Bye now. News Ninja Susan calling from Columbia City, Oregon. We move onward. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob.
Hey, Sandra. What's up?
Hey, listen. So, with this Rand Paul person, let me get this straight. Now, outside of the defense and protecting precious contracts, that's all for the government. But let me ask you something. When them Negroes are trying to get served at the counter, what institution is protecting the businesses from them darkies?
Well, see, business will... The Randian model will take care of that because a person of color will go open a restaurant and not seat white people.
Okay, so that's okay, because as far as I'm concerned, the government decided to switch sides. They went on the side of justice for about a minute there. So no matter which way you look at it, the government has to play in this party. You understand what I'm saying?
Yes, I do.
I am so disgusted. I'm like, listen, MF-er, who is providing the roads for your fucking businesses and all the infrastructure? These libertarians, I mean, good on him for bringing that shit to the forefront. You can see how infantile it is, and it don't make no sense.
Except to the people who are as infantile as he, to whom it makes perfect sense.
No, I understand, but the reaction is not all that cute, I'm telling you. He's backing away because, you know, that's, he sound crazy. The whole sort of government out of the way, is he crazy? Is he out of his damn mind? He wants to get that Medicare money, though, don't he?
Oh, doctors have a right to a comfortable living.
Right. No. I mean, that business you was playing before, what cartoon was that? Daffy Duck?
No, that was a mashup. One of them was Alibaba Bunny. And the other was Bunny and the Beanstalk or something like that.
Yeah, that was too funny. I mean, but the thing is that, give me a break from the sort of private businesses should be able to discriminate, and that's like a hallmark of a free society. In what hell?
Well, and that's my point. You're right. It is infantile. That is the perfect description, Sandra.
Lord.
Because it extends as far as, the libertarian extends no further than the reach of their checkbook. And, when it's their ass on the line, well, they want them some government.
Right, no.
I mean, we now know, I didn't know, but I've learned since, that Rand Paul is an ophthalmologist in Bowling Green, Kentucky. Okay? I want all the teabaggers in Kentucky to go get their eyes checked by Rand Paul and bring an effing chicken.
Yes, that woman, yes, yeah. I mean, the thing is that, I was reading an article about how now the Republicans are trying to get a hold of this dude to calm him down and give him some direction. I'm like, oh, no, it's all out the bag, fool,
And, somebody asked him right after he had won that Kentucky primary, Sandra. They asked him, what was it? Are you and Mitch McConnell going to support you? And in a really, really smug way, Rand Paul said, oh, we're going to be good friends.
No, but they're probably having a sit-down now after he opened his mouth one too many times.
Yeah, right. Welcome to real politic.
Well, it's just a thing.
But look, he's been hearing, I never dreamed it would be me saying this. You got to cut this creep some slack. Because he's been hearing this stuff he started hearing this hateful stuff at his daddy's knee.
Well, exactly, and plus, Ron Paul has made these speeches about the deficiency in the civil rights legislation for years. That's the thing that's so funny. It's like, you know, now they're listening to it because it's affiliated with this rancid Tea Party. More, please. Bring it on, because you sound really scary, you know, and maybe we get to see. I mean, if Americans are into this shit, it explains, it goes a long way to explain what's going on in the Gulf, the banks, the health care, and every other sort of on this show.
Yes, it is. And you know? But I want to go back to Ron Paul just for a minute. And I do this because it sort of reinforces what I just said about, you know, Rand learned all this stuff at his daddy's knee. We forget that back in the 90s, Ron Paul got caught sending out newsletters, libertarian newsletters, that had all kinds of racist filth in them.
Oh, yeah, no, I remember hearing about that, his papers, and his, I said, this dude has big issues with black men, another one of them, you know.
Let's see, here's an excerpt from one of Ron Paul's newsletters. Entitled Needlin'. Needlin', a new form of racial terrorism, has struck new, and this is from the mid-90s, has struck New York City streets on the Tony Upper West Side. At least 39 white women have been stuck with used hypodermic needles, perhaps infected with AIDS, by gangs of black girls between the ages of 12 and 14. The New York Times didn't find this fit to print for weeks and weeks until its candidate David Dinkins was safely elected. Even then, the story was very low-key, with race mentioned many paragraphs into it. Who can doubt that if the situation had been reversed, if white girls had done this to black women, we would have been subjected to months-long nationwide propaganda campaign on the evils of white America. The double standard strikes again. Really?
Yeah, no, I mean, the thing is, you know, these sort of fantasies that white people have about marauding black people doing anything, I'm like, when will I ever actually read a story like that? You know what I'm saying? It's incredible.
And Ron, you know, Ron Paul came out and said, well, you know, I didn't have any idea that guy was writing that. I hired a guy to write that for me, and I didn't know
right.
it. I mean, I'm not really a racist. And I,
right.
You know, but it was going out under your name, Ron. And so all of that stuff, Rand was picking that crap up all along.
No, and they, I mean, but the thing when you say it was a moron, and he's a dumbass, because they're, you know, this whole, oh, I'm against institutional racism, as if institutions only linger in the public domain. Are you kidding me? Look up institutional racism. It don't mean a stack building somewhere. I mean, they're so dumb. Help me.
I know.
He kept saying that, and I'm thinking, oh, this dumbass really thinks institutional racism means, you know, racism from up high somewhere. You know?
Right.
And it's just so, I mean, I wasn't alive, but I was just like, good Jesus, you know?
Yeah, well, I've got an email rolling in from Kevin down in Jacksonville Beach, Florida, and he says, I wish someone would ask Rand Paul whether the government has the right to enforce health code violations in restaurants or grocery stores. According to his philosophy, that would be a violation of private property rights. And
no,
Kevin
exactly.
goes on. Yeah. He says, do private property rights give one the right to serve whites non-tainted food while serving blacks tainted food?
Right.
Does a black restaurant owner have the rights to spit in a white person's food? Do you remember the hissy about Jesse Jackson?
No, there's no end to what he's talking about. I'm this sort of, you know, no government. That's why I say it's just infantile, because, you know, you cannot conduct business or not without government. I mean, it's just, I'm so sick of it. It's like, grow the hell up, really, quickly.
And you know, don't forget the join the human race part, Sandra.
Oh, God, and then if I can drift to this fool trying to provide some cover for this horrific corporation and this whole idea of there's accidents. Oh no! When I spill ketchup on my shirt, that's a fucking accident. What they do down there is like criminal. You know, it's just there is someone to blame. Like you so eloquently discussed with the court case. I mean, the
not kidding. That principle is 600-700 years old.
Jesus, it was common law, right? Which is what we base everything on.
Right, it's one of the first principles of it.
Right, no, and it's just sort of, but this nonstop with these right-wing people is sort of not assigning blame, you know, unless it's personal responsibility for the poorer people in this society. This fault run rampant, you know.
Yeah.
I'm so sick of it. I mean, how do you not, how in the world can you come on TV and give cover to BP at this moment? I'm like, wow. This dude.
And did you catch who one of the first people was to go on TV and give Rand Paul cover?
Who?
John Stossel.
Oh, that hideous guy from ABC?
Yeah, on Fox, of course. Came out and defended Rand Paul and said, well, you know, I think this is really unfair. And then Rand Paul's daddy came out and said, well, you know, that was a gotcha question.
Well, no, but, you know, gotcha is right. Gotcha, a racist. You know what I mean? We got you, all right.
Gotcha, moron. Gotcha, racist. Gotcha, bigot. You know,
come on. Yeah, we gotcha. That's what it is, because your boy been exposed, and he's upset that his ass is challenged. That tells me even more about, you know, the circles he run in.
But with all the Civil Rights Act stuff and with all the ADA stuff and all the BP stuff, the one that we keep blazing past that I personally, Sandra, think has a hell of a lot more import is the video, the audio that I played, I guess, Monday night, where he said what he said about the ADA, and then the guy asked the second question. Dr. Paul, do you think that an American citizen has the right under the Second Amendment to overthrow the government? And when that question was asked, Rand Paul had this look on his face like he'd just been poleaxed, and his little staffer stuck his hand over the camera lens and says, no more questions.
Oh, no.
So, because we know what the answer to that question is. We know what, I mean, with the civil rights and the ADA and the BP, we know that Ron Paul would say, absolutely they do.
And someone said,
burn, baby, burn.
Listen, but then let's get back to the dumbassness of it. Okay, let me get this straight. He goes to say it's un-American to bash a foreign corporation?
Yes.
You know, see, that's what I mean about just no information, spewing this BS because you've never been challenged before on it, you know? Now you're challenged, you're backing off of all these shows. And what's so frightening is they're being challenged by, you know, the corporate media that's about a minute from that belief anyway. Or maybe they are. They just, you know, have to keep it under DLs or camouflage it with deficit commissions and shit like that, you know.
Yeah, exactly. And so I want more from him.
Yeah, no, bring it on.
But apparently he don't want no more.
He don't want no more. That's what I'm saying. He's been backed off, and now you got the sort of polished Republican people trying to move in on him because they got to protect their interests since that dumbass is a candidate for November, right?
Right. And Rand Paul was scheduled to show up on Meet the Press this weekend, right?
That's right. That's why I heard that he was doing that, but. The thing is, it is Kentucky, and so I don't think they need to worry about it.
No, that's the Corey in Louisville. No, Corey in Louisville said, as quick as Rand Paul's libertarian impulses get widely bruited about in a state that lives and dies by agriculture subsidies.
Okay, there is that. Oh, that's interesting. Okay.
Yeah, but just back to the because I how it is with me in trivia. Back to Rand Paul backing out on Meet the Press. Nobody, and perhaps it's because it's so damned easy to just sit there and poke softballs out of the park. Nobody cancels on Meet the Press. Rand Paul has Rand Paul has just joined a little very exclusive triumvirate.
You can't get, that's like PR that you just can't pay for, right?
Right, but there are now three people on planet Earth who have backed out of Meet the Press.
Bork, is he one of them?
No, it's much better than that.
Who?
I mean, I want to see these people sitting down to dinner. Saudi Arabian Prince Bandar.
Oh, well, he ain't nowhere to be found, though.
No, it gets better. But sit down, Sandra.
Okay.
Louis Farrakhan. And Rand Paul. Where on planet Earth? I mean, what other Jeopardy question?
Well,
could the answer be Louis Farrakhan, Rand Paul, and Prince Bandar?
Well, maybe Farrakhan and Prince Bandar are on the same spaceship. They ain't got him. Came to get him.
Yeah, and I'm thinking Rand's got his boarding pass.
Well, you know Farrakhan, I mean, that branch of the nation, them fools be talking about spaceships and shit, too, just like the Scientologists. So, you know, maybe that's what's going on.
Well, you know, our buddy Dennis in Kentucky writes in periodically, and he says, that's why I keep telling you, Bob. No matter how hard I try, I can't keep up with the crazy.
Well, no, listen, I know you have people on the line, so I'll let you go, but I have to tell you something. Apparently, because I read this article, I forget what, Common Dreams, but there's some pending privatization of the public housing coming down the pipe.
Yeah, that's real disturbing.
Courtesy of Obama.
Yeah, I read about it on BuzzFlash this morning, and it was, what?
Yeah, listen, I mean, you know, it's unbelievable, but it's another Nixon and China moment that's happening. So the public housing is frightening, but I feel scared for our Social Security, especially if Obama gets a second term. Remember welfare reform?
Oh, yeah, I do.
Now, I know I don't mean to end it on a bashing of Obama, but see, I'm pissed off with him because where he at on this hole in the bottom of the ocean? He should be pounding this shit every day, but he's not. And I'm like, what's going on?
And what little he does do, Rand Paul comes out and says, you know, that's un-American.
Right, but you don't get no pushback, though.
No.
And it's just like, well, you know, you are in charge. You know, I just don't get it. And what, he's scared that people are saying is anti-business? Listen, the level of hatred towards business in this country is at an all-time high at the moment.
Yeah, it is.
And so... It's just sort of, I don't understand, and every incident now, this man is not taking political advantage of, and I'm starting to wonder why not, actually.
I have those moments in the deep and dark and still of the night, too, Sandra.
Okay, well, listen, anyway, you know, I ain't got nothing funny today because I'm pissed off.
No, it's hard to find the funny.
Well, no, but I am graduating tomorrow. I'm actually walking.
Oh, hot damn.
Yes, so I'll be pointing.
You point. We want pictures of you pointing.
Okay, yeah, you know, maybe I will, you know, get some sort of photo with me and the whole get up pointing, and you know, to you.
I absolutely insist upon it.
Okay, well, listen, have a good weekend.
Congratulations, Sandra.
All right, thank you.
Later. Bye now.
Bye.
Just to follow up real quick, congratulations, Sandra. But just to follow up real quick with these Rand newsletters, I found this, and they're doing some great work. Dave Nywert, who wrote The Eliminationists and blogs over at Crooks and Liars, does such a magnificent job with all of this stuff. He writes, or he links to a story about the Ron Paul newsletters, and it says, while bashing Dr. King, the newsletters had kind words for the former imperial wizard of the Ku Klux Klan, David Duke. These are Ron Paul's newsletters. No matter how many times he says, I didn't write them. You paid somebody to write them, jerk off. In a passage titled The Duke's Victory, a newsletter celebrated Duke's 44% showing in the 1990 Louisiana Republican Senate primary. Quote, Duke lost the election, but he scared the blazes out of the establishment. Then in a 1991 Ron Paul newsletter, it asked, is David Duke's new prominence, despite his losing the gubernatorial election, good for anti-big government forces? The newsletter story reached the conclusion, quote, Our priority should be to take the anti-government, anti-tax, anti-crime, anti-welfare loafers, anti-race privilege, anti-foreign meddling message of Duke and enclose it in a more consistent package of freedom.
Huh. What's that sound like?
Oh, wait. That's 1991. It sounds like proto-teabagger.
That's exactly what the teabaggers are.
And it goes back to the early 90s. Nothing new, nothing grassroots, nothing real about the teabaggers.
Michael, also known as Kid A in the chat room, says, so, Rand Paul, Prince Bandar, and Louis Farrakhan walk into a bar.
And says, and I'm sure somebody out there can write the joke. Finish the punchline. Michael's done the front end work. And that is, really, it is. That's
the front end of a joke. So a racist, and a racist walk into a bar. Because Prince Bandar is a racist. Rand Paul is a racist. And if you ask the right wing about it, so is Louis Farrakhan. I've never had a problem with Louis Farrakhan. If he's got a problem with me, he's never brought it to my attention.
But yeah, what a little triad, what a little troika. I mean, Pompey, Crassus, and Caesar, this ain't. Congratulations beginning to roll in for Sandra's graduation. Fancy writes in real quick, I want to share why I have a private little giggle every time the chicken for medical care subject comes up. If you will remember the Broadway musical and movie The Best Little Whorehouse in Texas, which is based on a real story of the legendary Chicken Ranch. The Chicken Ranch got its name during the Depression when pocket money was hard to come by, and Miss Jessie Williams, the madam at the time, let it be known that one chicken would be accepted for each sexual encounter. The Chicken Ranch made it through the Depression selling excess chickens and eggs as well as their usual commerce.
Maybe that's where Sue Loudon got it from.
You know, they watch movies and they occasionally even read books, although while their fingers move under the lines, their lips move. These right-wingers and teabaggers and so forth. And you know, this goes all the way back to Reagan, who supplanted movie roles for actual memories. Once upon a time being told, having mentioned around him President Grover Cleveland, Ronnie responded, well, I played him in a movie once. And then someone had to remind at least the people, if not Ronnie, that no, he didn't play Grover Cleveland in a movie. He played Grover Cleveland Alexander, who was a famous baseball pitcher and not a president of the United States. But then again, Ronald Reagan starts a lot of this stuff with his campaign against Jimmy Carter and all the filth that went with it and all the torment of the Iranian hostages. Ronnie Reagan is the absolute godfather of all of this. He and his philosophy that facts are stupid things. And it's rolling up on the beaches of the Gulf right now to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hello.
Hey, Larry?
Yeah.
How's it going?
Okay. I guess we have to be really thankful for Rand Paul because he's letting people see the looniness that libertarianism is.
Without a doubt, that's true. The question is, of course, always, how loony are the people of Kentucky?
Well, that is a question. But, you know, when you start saying get rid of Medicare and stuff like that, you know, it hits home for a lot of people, especially if I'm going to have to, you know, gather up enough chickens to pay off the doctor.
It's a bunch of chickens.
Yeah, those people don't work cheap. You know, they don't live in my neighborhood, and they don't drive jalopies.
No, not so much. Now, the other thing about Rand Paul that's going to be fun, and Larry, I mentioned this to you because of your area of particular interest. Rand Paul is not a fundamentalist. And, you know, being fundamentalist and talking fundamentalist talk goes a long ways in Kentucky.
Yeah, if that's all you have. Now, I think that there are a lot of people that will overlook that for some other issues.
I just want to see Rand Paul hold a press conference at the Creationism Museum.
Yeah, right.
You know, right next to the diorama of Adam and Eve and Cain and Abel having lunch next to the vegetarian tyrannosaur.
Right. You know, they show Adam and Eve sitting down with the dinosaur, or the children sitting down with the dinosaurs. But I didn't know the dinosaurs remained vegetarian after Adam and Eve had children.
Oh yes.
I mean, I thought they.
No, they were all coexisting as and all the dinosaurs were vegetarian. They were probably members of PETA.
Well, I thought that the dinosaurs became meat eaters after Adam and Eve had had to kill a.
Oh, after the fall.
Yeah.
Sometime in the early winter. No, different fall. God, I hate that stuff.
It's,
how many pedophiles can dance on the head of a pin?
Right. But you know, I wanted to ask you something. One thing is. We see them bring in the BP executive and grill him before Congress and all that, but he's just an employee. Why in the world aren't they bringing in the board of directors and grilling them?
You just asked the $64 question, and the answer they would give would be because, well, we're immune.
Well, I don't know that they are. You know, The corporate veil protects the investors, but does it protect the board of directors?
Only insofar as they are presumed, if I recall correctly, the board is presumed to act in good faith, and the board is presumed to not act against the because at the bottom line. It's only when the board does something that harms share prices that liability is imposed, because there is no, and I can never repeat this enough, Larry, there is no legal or there's no legal obligation for a corporation to act justly, morally, ethically. The only thing a corporation has to do is act profitably.
Could we legislatively, even at the state level, impute crimes of the corporation to the board of directors jointly and severally?
I think it probably already exists to a certain extent. But yes, you could. I think you could write that statute. There's nothing constitutional to prevent that from happening, because all corporate law is statutory. It's not constitutional law. Except for the, you know, Citizens United business and the Santa Clara County versus Union Pacific Railroad business that takes as read the fact that corporations are persons. But I would say that that's even a double-edged sword in its own right, Larry, because if corporations are persons, persons are liable to all the things that persons have rights and persons have duties. And one of the duties of personhood and citizenship is not to violate the law of the land.
That's right. And presumably, if the board of directors was doing their job, then they must have allowed or directed that illegal behavior.
That would seem to me to be subject to reasonable and rational proof.
Right, which a grand jury could adjudicate.
Well, let me throw one more magic word at you. RICO.
That's true.
Racketeer-influenced corrupt organization.
Oh, yeah. The oil spill thing has three corporations acting in conjunction with each other.
nice of you to notice.
And they're all pointing the finger at each other, hoping that they can tie it up in court until we're all dead.
Yeah. Well, and by all dead, you know, until the whole planet is dead.
Yeah, well.
Or at least until our betters have built themselves their Logan's Run domes.
Yeah, as was pointed out, if they actually kill the ocean, I don't think Blackwater's going to extract them to their safe houses.
No. I don't know if any house will be safe. But the whole point is to have lots of machine guns around the around the biodomes to shoot down the proles as they try to get in.
Yeah.
I mean, this is real on the beach kind of Mad Max, you know, apocalyptic stuff.
People have come up with ideas that, you know, should be used to squelch this flow of oil, but I don't know, one place I read that they were down at like 30,000 feet with that borehole.
Yeah, that's right. It's 5,000 feet to the seafloor.
Yeah. Now that the pressures at those depths, I don't know that we have a way to control that. And they're worried that any grit material that comes up with that oil is going to abrade the hole itself.
And the hole will thereby get.
It'll get bigger.
Bigger and bigger. Yep.
And if we let enough oil out of that formation, normally they put seawater back in, you know, to float the oil up.
Right.
And to replace it. But if you leave a cavern, then things start falling in, don't they?
They do.
You get like an earthquake or maybe a fissure opens.
You're scaring me.
Yeah, I know. I'm worried about
that. Right, because you're scaring you, too.
Yeah. I mean, these are, you know, far-out speculations, but somebody ought to be looking at them.
Well, that's the whole point of the scientific process, isn't it, to consider all possibilities? It's like what David said a little bit ago, $500,000, this doesn't happen.
Right. You know, I'm an engineer, and when I went out on a project, I tried to plan for every contingency, everything that could break. Because usually it does.
Well, isn't that the nature of engineering? I mean, isn't engineering the scientific the scientifically driven exercise of trying to figure out how and when stuff will screw up?
That's part of it, yes. And you know, you try to avoid single point of failure mechanisms.
And I trust that translates as one thing that can go wrong and take everything with it.
Yeah. You know, I think we really need to rethink the role of the corporation in our society. It seems to have run away. I mean, what happens if a corporation buys all of its own stock back?
Well, then it just becomes a closely held corporation.
Right, held by itself. But a corporation is nothing more than a fictitious human.
That happens to be immortal, yes.
Yes. And so we've actually created life.
It's alive.
Yeah.
Now, the problem is, but to continue that analogy, not metaphor, but analogy, we're just saying that for Mr. Goering's benefit out in California. To continue that analogy, though, you do the next scene from Young Frankenstein, and you know, what kind of brain did you bring me for this? Whose brain was this? Abby. Abby who?
Yeah.
Abby normal. Again, they keep going to, you know, they keep going, the Republicans and the right-wingers and the libertarians and the teabaggers keep going to movies and thinking they're documentaries.
Yeah. Oh, here's another one. I was talking to my wife about this hypothetical. With all these corporations based in the Cayman Islands, what would happen if some terrorist smuggled an H-bomb into the Cayman Islands and blew it away? What would happen to all the corporations incorporated there?
Well, that might be a lot like when the Yankees burned down all the courthouses in the South. Made it easier for somebody else to come in and grab the land.
Yeah, I mean, because at that point, if there's no incorporating authority, the board of directors has no authority to reform the corporation.
Don't be planting ideas in people's heads, Larry.
Yeah, I guess that's right. I'll get a call from somebody.
Yeah, with no sense of humor, a wire coming out of their ear, a black suit, and a skinny black tie. Yeah, you don't want that. No. David in Tennessee pointing out as a function of this conversation that, and I didn't know this, the United States is the only country, Larry, and you'll have some appreciation for this from an engineering standpoint, the only country that allows a driller to skip the third level of shutoff. Virtually every other nation on the whole planet insists that three levels of auto shutoff exist on those rigs.
Under Dick Cheney, that requirement was deleted because it was too expensive.
And the question arises, too expensive for what?
For BP.
Well, it's not good for business.
That's right.
And if it's not good for business, it's un-American.
Yeah. And you know, the thing that these teabaggers don't understand is that big business is not the friend of small business.
Oh, no, not by a long shot. Small business exists for being eaten up and gobbled by big business.
And a lot of these regulations really are promoted by big business to put little business out of business.
Yeah, because, the Sherman Antitrust Act was passed, Larry, with big business back then, Standard Oil and so forth, throwing massive hissy fits. But and they've hated it since. But the fact of the matter was, had the Sherman Act not been passed, they would have eaten it. And maybe that is the argument against that kind of legislation. Let these things eat themselves alive and collapse. But the only problem with that is that when they do that, they take a lot of innocence with them. Which is borne out in the Gulf.
If we'd have let them acquired all the money there is, once they acquired all of it, it wouldn't be worth anything because we'd start using something else.
It would no longer have any sort of referent of exchange.
Yeah.
Which then becomes, and isn't the next step then? Doesn't it become a command economy?
We really need to rethink some of these things. But speaking of corporations, I need to tell you about my favorite corporation here.
Oh, do please.
Oh, just last week, I came back to my computer, and I had a nice little screen there saying, your computer is infected. And, scan it to find out what it is and all that. Well, I'd never seen this company before.
Oh, no.
Okay, so this is a Trojan that shuts down your computer. You can't do anything until you pay them money. And, it's a case of extortion. So, of course, I didn't do that. I managed to regain control of my computer because I've got another computer. I look up, what's going on with this.
And you go in and you edit the registry and, right.
Well, yeah, I managed to get control back, and then I ran every, I've got software, anti-spyware, antivirus, and I ran everything that I could find against this, or every legitimate thing, spy bot and all that. And it's still there, but none of these products will find it. The bad guys have gotten really good, and I suspect they may have put, evolutionary algorithms into their stuff so that the things mutate faster than the antivirus people can catch them, and the ones that survive propagate.
Oh, wow.
That's my...
I had one of those exactly what you're talking about. Ferg picked one up one evening when I wasn't watching. And Bob Lottie in the chat room and I spent like 3-4 hours on the phone chasing that sucker down and eliminating it.
Yeah, well, what I did was I finally was able to save anything I wanted to off on, flash drives. And then I got out my, Restore XP disk that Dell had supplied, And I did that. And then, oh, I need to connect to the internet. And it turns out Dell never supplied me with an Ethernet controller driver.
Oh, no.
So, you know, rather than, spend time on the phone trying to explain to them that they sold me something, you know, without the driver or, you know, them telling me, oh, go here and download it, I got out my Ubuntu disk and, you know, 10 minutes later on this computer, I had a fully functional operating system that is free, will never cost me anything, and does almost everything that that Microsoft would do. So if there's anybody who really gets upset with Microsoft, there is an alternative that'll do a heck of a lot of stuff these days.
Oh, Linux is getting better and better and better.
Yeah. It's a communist operating system, of course.
Absolutely. I was reading about that at Shelley the Republican just the other day.
Yeah. And it's hated by Microsoft, of course, and is taking over some of their market share, especially in the server area.
Well, and look what's happening in the cell phone world. Android, while not specifically Linux, is certainly open source based, and there's a reason that what is it, Android 2.1 or Android 2.5 or whatever, is being referred to as the iPhone killer. Because it'll do things that an iPhone won't do. It'll multitask, and it'll run Flash. That's the one blow away that I had no idea. Had no idea an iPhone would not run Flash, or the new iPad will not run Flash.
Really? Oh gosh.
And to not run Flash is, I don't know. That's like an automobile that won't use tires.
Yeah, these days, I used to think highly of Apple, but lately, I think they've just become like the others, money grubbing. But I recommend Ubuntu to anybody because, literally, I put the disk in, and at the end of the process, about 10 minutes, I had an operating system that was already connected to the internet, and you can download lots and lots of applications with no problem.
Yeah, I just I got an email in from our buddy Ron in Raleigh, Larry, and he said what Larry's describing is called scareware. It's a rootkit.
Yeah.
And he says use malware bytes in safe mode. So maybe that's apparently if you want to hang on to your operating system, that's
Not that badly. I'm afraid that as
Microsoft has lost you.
Yeah, as the bad guys get more capable, Microsoft, may become untenable. I've got Vista on my laptop, but that's it.
I've got Vista on a laptop, and then I've got 7 on a laptop, and 7 is much more pleasant, I must say.
Okay.
Vista was just,
yeah. Yeah.
It was the worst thing Microsoft had turned out since Windows 3.11 for warehouses.
Yeah. Well, they're locked into this thing where they started out with DOS, and then they built Windows on top of DOS, and in trying to maintain compatibility, they just carried along a lot of things, like not being able to restrict execution on files.
Right.
And so, if it looks like a picture and you click on it, but it's actually an executable, you're screwed.
in short, yeah. I remember years and years and years ago, early in my marriage to my lovely wife, we were traveling somewhere, going up the highway, and it was like the day before Windows 95 was being introduced or released. And all the news stories said, finally, true multitasking. Not so much.
Yeah.
But now that communist operating system may catch up with them.
I certainly hope so, because it
For me, it's always been a matter of getting my head around the nomenclature. For some reason or another, the Windows way of doing things is just burnt into my brain. And to rethink how that all happens inside Linux has just been, can't process.
Yeah, well, the GNOME desktop is really good. It's a point-and-click environment. You don't really have to learn the shell commands.
Well, that would help. That would help a whole lot. Larry, it's good hearing from you, and I hope we hear from you soon.
Okay.
All right, you take care.
Okay.
Good luck with the good luck with the OS.
Well, I love it. I had it on my other computer anyway, and it just gave me an incentive to move it over to the fast machine.
And get free.
Yes.
All right. Take care, Larry.
Bye.
Bye now. How quickly this little 3 hours is running away from us. Onward we go. Try again. Hey, welcome to the program. Hey, Richard, what's up?
Well, let's see. I got only a minute or two. First of all, I want to say that I'm fed up with Microsoft also. I test an awful lot of free software.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I've probably been through over 100 programs in the last few years. And my computer is like a trusty old industrial strength box, and I'm sick of having to buy new computers because, the industry goes and makes it all obsolete.
But Richard, isn't some of that a function of the user public constantly demanding to be able to do more with the box?
I think it's more, companies come out with new bells and whistles that seduce the users. And, I just want to do basic stuff, like get into the head-on chat room, stuff like
that. Right, sure. But, like all the video and the video games and...
Yeah, that pushes the envelope, sure. I remember
having a World War II flight simulator game 15 years ago.
Right. Anyway, let me
and when you and,
a woman who's running on a platform with chickens.
Oh, Sue Loudon?
In Nevada, right?
Correct.
Why don't we all call up her campaign office and say, "Hi, I'd like to make a donation to Sue's campaign. Where do you want the chickens?"
Oh, I think that's already happening, Richard. I think it's really happening a lot. Because now, I was over at Crooks and Liars looking at their most watched videos, and one of them was Sue Loudon now says she didn't say what she very clearly said.
Are they getting chickens?
I'm sure they well, among other things, I've been told that there's a person who follows her campaign around dressed in a chicken suit.
Oh, that's good. That's good. We need more animals, for her. But, I got a question for you about Southern ease, and it has to do with the various permutations of you all.
Y'all.
Yeah, so, I got you all and y'all with the Y apostrophe.
Yeah, which Y apostrophe A-L is the, A-L-L is the correct spelling.
Okay,
y'all.
And then there's Y-A-W-L.
That's a regional heresy.
Okay, and then Kate suggested all y'all.
Well, no, all y'all is the second person absolutely plural.
Okay. By the way, before we go, we're pushing time. About Linux, Linux came from the hip of Unix.
Right.
And I took a class in Unix for a week, and I absolutely loved it. It was like DOS's internal command language with all the blinders removed. And it's really, really delightful, very sensible, you know, you learn some commands and you sort of build on them and they kind of make sense. And I, you know, I'm really thinking of making a conversion very seriously.
No, Linux really does get, I mean, especially if you've got any working functionality and familiarity with Unix, Linux makes a lot of sense. It's just,
really?
Yeah.
What I hear is that it's quite efficient.
Yeah, well, it is. I mean, what it, you were complaining about, you know, requiring more and more computer to do more and more things. It's my understanding that Linux requires much, much less processor muscle.
Exactly. Me too. Yeah. Yes. Microsoft's tradition is to just load more and more and more stuff into memory that you're not using.
Yeah.
So, you know, we need a clean and mean operating system here.
Well, that might be the way for you to go. And, you know, there are books out there and stuff, and you with your technical background, Richard, would not have any real issues, I think, grabbing hold of it.
Probably not. You know, I brought home a computer I found on the street, you know. And
Richard, don't feed the stray computers. They'll never leave.
The thing is, they're out there for the taking, you know. It sure opens up some possibilities for us poor folks, you know.
Oh, without a doubt. Without a doubt. I mean, depending on what it is and what kind of learning curve you're willing to climb, no doubt in my mind.
Well, I think, you know, your previous caller, mentioned something about Ubuntu, which he said can go online in a matter of minutes, and that's so appealing. And, you know, I've been thinking, too, because I'm a musician at my core, but I've worked in a lot of other things, and especially, you know, various angles of technology. Doing documentation, it has been really interesting because I've been in the world of engineers. And it's been, you know, I really have a strong interest in understanding why people do what they do. And, you know, an offshoot of that is a fascination with psychopathy, because I think we really need to understand that if we're going to get anywhere as a civilization. But let's not go there right now. I was fascinated by the question of how can anybody design a bomb? You know, how can people design
bombs? You mean ethically, morally?
Yeah, the whole thing. And it was interesting for me to work on, my first tech writing job was with engineers who were designing radiation therapy machines. And it was after an event that happened in Canada in which all the safeties in a radiation machine blew simultaneously, and the thing microwaved a woman to death.
Ew.
And so the FDA was really on, you know, down the necks of anybody in this business. And so I was, you know, I was kind of watching how did the people design what they did and what tools were they using. And I think I think I understand a bit of it. There's a joy in making something happen. I documented some things which were so clever that it's like, I had to drop my jaw and just in awe of how the circuitry worked. It was just so elegant. And you know, I think I can relate to just the joy in cleverness in the creation of something that functions perfectly.
Oh, and it is an elegance. Yes, absolutely.
What's that?
You are, yes, elegance. That's the absolute.
Yeah, I think in scientific fields, the concept of elegance is one of being able to use your resources, let's say printed circuit board traces, for instance, with great economy and efficiency. And so that's the way I understand the word elegance as, you know, as being applied to, let's say, machinery or circuitry or software. And there's a beauty to that. There's a joy, you know. I don't have it. but I
but you have the appreciation of it.
Oh yeah. I mean, it's, you know, because I have to explain it to people. You know, the guy produces, you know, for the radiation machine, he produces a circuit board that corrects the radiation beam for temperature and humidity in the test room. You know, in the treatment room. And it's like, you know, we want to kill the tumor. We don't want to kill anything else. And so here's the guy's creating this circuit board that does these minute corrections of the beam. And it's like, we've got these two sensors. We have a pressure sensor and a temperature sensor. And these devices put out an analog signal. Now, how are we going to turn that into digital? And it goes through all these little stages, one of which is counting the wave tops. You know, let's say we're putting out an analog signal that's a frequency. And so we've got something that's counting how fast that frequency is going. And what we wind up with at the end is a digital description. Am I clear?
Yes, I'm with you all the way.
Okay, so, I mean, to me, like, what's the difference between, because you know I'm into audio, what is the difference between analog music and digital music? And here's the way I explain it. I say analog is a picture of the sound. It's an image. We play the picture back.
Yeah, I mean, the human ear is an analog receiver.
Yes, yes. Now, digital is a description of the sound. Instead of a picture, it's a language. It's saying, you know, this is what's happening
yeah.
at this particular military. You know, and we reconstruct it from that description. So, I mean, my job, let's say, as a teacher or, you know, or an explainer is to hand somebody, you know, to figure out some kind of container, a bowl, let's say. You know, I can hand you my chicken soup, you know.
Right.
And you know, hopefully you'll get the chicken soup. So I was, you know, the thing is that what I want in the world of engineering is I want responsible engineering, like your last caller, you know.
And, you know, but you know what? As long as profit drives it, you won't get it.
Yeah,
because profit,
yeah.
You know, just to let me expand for a minute, profit is what told Morton Thiokol that the space shuttle had to go up on that January morning in 1986. Sound engineering didn't say that. Profit did.
Yeah, yeah. Or just cheapness. I mean, I've been conversing about this with somebody who's done a lot of programming. And from my point of view, you know, what I've seen in the workplace is that the manager says to the programmers, okay, get cranking, get this product out the door. We got a release schedule to meet. And the result of this is crappy programs, you know, and crappy products.
Well, and deadly stuff. Look, it is the sick, psychotic obsession with profit that has
yep.
oil rolling up on the Gulf Coast, and that sick obsession with profit is the holy altar of so-called conservatism, Richard.
Yeah, I can see that at the bottom. I mean, okay, you know, your corporation's got to make a profit. The more profit, the better. And the guy who feeds that monster gets a raise, you know, gets more work, gets some kind of goodies, some sort of a reward, and he's the product manager.
Right, but that's not what I'm getting at.
Yeah,
it is the obsession, the fetishization of not just profit but instant profit. You know, we are often described culturally and societally as an instant gratification society.
Exactly.
Well,
that's what this manager is feeding you.
Right. There's no, but there is no better example of that than the instant gratification culture that surrounds the profit motive in the American business model. Now, the same does not apply worldwide, Richard. But in the American model, if you open for business today, you'd better, by God, be declaring some kind of a profit on your first quarterly profit and loss statement. And there'd better, by God, be a dividend involved. Because if there's not, Moody's or one of those other the blue smoke and mirrors rating houses will take a dump on you. A classic case in point is Costco. Now, Costco's been around forever, right?
Right.
And they are easily the equal or better of Sam's Club. Okay?
Definitely.
But Costco operates on a different model, which includes being friendly to labor unions and therefore having a much lower turnover rate in employment than Walmart does.
Well, I'm not sure.
Well, wait,
yeah.
Because I am.
Okay.
So what happens is Costco has the better model, the more sustainable model, the more long-term model, but because Walmart pumps everything into profit on a quarterly basis and does more of it than Costco does, Costco's model takes a beating on Wall Street.
Oh, okay. But Walmart's is more fragile.
Well, it doesn't matter. If Walmart burns down tomorrow, as long as all the inside traders can get out in a hurry, it'll be all right. Because, and that's the fundamental, and I hope I can state this clearly enough that it will make sense, that is the problem with the American business model today. It is not designed to actually take care of business.
It can't take care of itself.
It's not designed to sustain. It is not designed to, it's not actually designed to service Joe's shareholder. It's designed to generate maximum profit in minimum time, and it's all, okay, can't go a show without a Bible verse. It's all eat, drink, and be merry, for tomorrow we die.
Definitely. And that's not the way it was when I was a kid, you know. I mean, we had corporations that were like institutions, that were solid, you know, that were there for the long haul. If I describe the Pennsylvania Railroad, the words that come to my head is like it was the United States Navy on land. The amount of money that they spent to build Pennsylvania Station, and especially the surrounding infrastructure, was just mind-boggling. I mean, I'll save time. I won't describe the whole thing, but it involves two tunnels to New Jersey, a tunnel clear across Manhattan with four tracks, four tunnels under the East River to Long Island, a big yard on Long Island, an electric generating plant, and a huge bridge and abutments that crossed over into the Bronx on the other side. In other words, from the east, crossed over into the Bronx and went connected into Boston. So, I mean, the station is no longer there. And the station was just a grand piece of architecture.
Oh.
Wonderful piece of architecture.
Without a doubt.
You know, and so it's like, and their competitor, the New York Central, built Grand Central Station, which, you know, didn't cost like what the Pennsylvania did. They were competitors. But, I mean, these corporations were designed to last forever.
And some of the stuff they did, but in that era, they didn't have to. It's before the modern Randian ethics was injected into the business model.
Right. Yeah. Stockholders. I mean, there were
back then. Well, look. First of all, back then the people who owned stocks were, frankly, upper class, and the stock holding model was, well, you'll have your crashes and you'll have your booms. But it was all dictated by the buy and hold model among the investor class.
Exactly. And buy and hold model for old granny, you know?
Right. And if you do that, you ride it out.
Yeah, yeah.
But that buy and hold model is passé, and it is used now. Those people are used as cannon fodder for the day trader wars.
Right, exactly. It's terrible. And, you know,
I mean, look, Richard, I'm going to get on an airplane at 8 o'clock in the morning. It is some airline that sells under the Delta name, but it ain't really Delta.
Oh, yeah. One of those,
and,
they call them commuter airlines.
Yeah, well, it's a captive. It's a wholly owned subsidiary, whatever. And the pilot behind the stick will be making just slightly less than the manager of my local Taco Bell. I'm not kidding. And I'll get on this commuter jet that goes from Charleston to Atlanta, and I know that I'm going to have my knees in my chin. It's almost like you're in, because, you know, I'm more than 6 feet tall, so that necessitates the fact that I'm going to look like I'm in pre-crash position all the way to Atlanta.
Oh, that's painful.
And then in Atlanta, I get on another plane to go to Salt Lake City.
Oh, my God.
And, you know, that's 4 hours. You know, I couldn't even fly west to go west.
Where are you going?
Salt Lake City.
Okay. Interesting place.
I got to fly to Atlanta.
Coming back, I think
I go through Kalamazoo by way of Nome.
Well, I don't
know.
But my
whole point here, Richard, is that flying used to be a pleasant experience.
Right.
It was, only in its earliest days was it anything approaching as pleasant an experience as the railways.
Well, you know, it used to be regulated. And
Ronald Reagan again.
Yeah, and it was expensive. You know, it was regulated and it was costly, but there weren't ruinous price wars. You know, and
well, it's not. I mean, it's not cheap now. And what's more, I had to fork over $23 to take a suitcase with me.
Well, the problem is, as I understand it, that there's not exactly a lot of competition involving Charleston's airport.
You get some U.S. scare, some American, or maybe United, and some Delta. But none of them are actually any of those real airlines. They're the Fred's local discount bargain bin airline operated by Fred's Airways Incorporated on behalf of Delta.
Right, and they can be pretty expensive sometimes.
Oh, yeah. And so what happens is, you know, I think about things like carbon footprints. Imagine flying southeast to go west. You know, this crap went out with Christopher Columbus.
Yeah, I know. But that's happened with the freight railroads, too, by the way. There's these jagged routes, you know, not as bad as some of the airline stuff. But
And every choice I had was going another direction to go the direction I wanted.
Yeah, right. Well, we have, we're talking about a lot of problems here, and what I'm really concerned about more is how do we fix this? Because it ain't going to fix itself.
There's a school of thought that says it simply has to be allowed to crash and burn. And there's a lot of liberals out there who were pissed off at the Bush bailout of Wall Street.
Yeah.
But I could never quite get around to being one of those people because I kept seeing innocent people in the wake of the guilty people's, because the guilty were not going to suffer as the guilty should. They were going to pass the suffering along to the people who were innocent.
Oh, definitely. Remember that after 9/11, they bailed out the airlines right away.
And that got us what?
I don't know. Got you squeezed seats, I think.
That's about the size of it. And it's all over the place. We talk about the commuter airlines that are captive to the larger one. It's no different than, for instance, I forget what the name of the coal company is. amalgamated Jesus or whatever, where Upper Big Branch blew up, okay?
Yeah, amalgamated megacorp.
Right, Centennial Widget. But nobody in their right mind thinks that that's not Massey Energy.
Yes,
that's
yes,
just a corporate shell game. It is it's a legalized corporate fraud designed to protect Don Blankenship and the directors of Massey Energy precisely in the event that what happened at Upper Big Branch happened.
Yes, yes, yes.
And the airlines, frankly, use the commuter things the same way.
Well, I don't know. I mean, you know, back to Delta. Delta's a crappy company.
But they didn't used to be.
They were, hell, I remember them shafting their janitors back in the 1970s. I was a member of SEIU at the time. So, you know, I was a city employee for San Francisco. And, you know, so, I mean, it was all over the union paper about, you know, how Delta was, you know, was kicking out the union janitors and hiring, you know, one of these independent firms, which was non-union.
Right.
So I've been watching this company for, you know, for the longest time. It's like they're the leaders of, you know, you have companies which sort of lead the race to the bottom. I'm interested in, you know, in that phenomenon. It's like we used to have an oil company in these parts called Unocal.
Oh, well, yeah. Hey, remember, who's Unocal's most favorite former employee?
I don't know. Who?
Hamid Karzai.
Oh, yeah.
He was a Central Asian acquisitions guy for Unocal.
Yes, 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 yes. And, you see, Unocal was like, first of all, Unocal was the worst polluter of San Francisco Bay for various reasons. But they would do things that other oil companies, believe it or not, were too ethical to do.
Disturbing.
What?
That's disturbing.
Well, it was just, you know, there are companies like that. I recall there was some extractive industry that was based in New Orleans. It was like a smaller company. You know, outfits that, you know, that would just be sleazier, more unethical. So, you know, Unocal was selling gasoline under the name of 76, Union 76. And
oh, we had them all over. I remember them.
Did you? And the funny thing, see, they took the grottiest oil that you could get. I think it was called Bunker C oil. You know.
Oh, that's a fun new word, grottiest. I'm hanging on to that one.
Well, it's a British, you know, grot. It means junk in Brit. And they had, you know, this stuff was almost like tar. The Southern Pacific Railroad was putting it, you know, they were burning it in their steam engine.
I was going to say, it's one step up from asphalt.
It's kind of like that, yeah. You know, in their steam locomotives, it had to be heated in order to flow into the burners. And then in diesels, they have special fuel injection systems that had to be worked out to burn this crap. So, I mean, you know, railroad, you want to burn the cheapest fuel you can. And so Unocal was refining this stuff into gasoline, and ironically, they probably had the cleanest gasoline there was. But in the process, of course, they polluted the air, they polluted the water, they had accidents constantly. Like this one that just happened, they wouldn't put money into safety. And people, you know, every once in a while people would get killed. And there were some left-wing types out here who tried to get the corporate charter revoked. And I've never heard of that actually happening before. Have you?
No, or working.
Yeah, exactly. Well, they were at it. They were trying. And what the people did who were running Unocal in the wake of this was they got themselves bought by Chevron. So that's a convenient way of disposing of the problem. You dispose of your whole company,
yeah,
and walk away counting the dollars.
Oh, I remember that big orange ball with the blue 76 in the middle of it.
Yeah, that was the outfit.
Yeah.
And in the process, it's like they
because before that they were pure oil.
Oh, I never heard of that.
Well, that's how it was marketed where I grew up.
Okay.
Yeah, Pure became Union 76.
I see, I see. Well, they sell off parts of themselves. I mean, what happened here was they sold one refinery to some new outfit out of Texas. We got two of their refineries in my county. And then they sold this one not too far from me to ConocoPhillips. And they both had explosions after that. And somebody got killed, I think, at the Martinez refinery. And I think it's Valero that owns it. So, you know, this stuff was rickety. So they got rid of it. And then they decided to only do extraction. See, so there's where Kaizai comes in.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, Unocal had been negotiating for the pipeline from the Caspian Sea Basin across Afghanistan to the port in Pakistan prior to us knocking off the Taliban. Because it was back in early May, it was May of 2001. It was March of 2001 when we gave a few million dollars to the Taliban in the George W. Bush administration.
Oh, yes.
For their successful, that was Ronald Reagan, who compared the Mujahideen to the founding fathers. Jesus. You know, that just stops me in my tracks when I say something like that. But no, it was the W. Bush administration that gave a few million dollars to the Taliban in praise of their opium eradication efforts, because they were more successful at that than anybody had been. And then a few weeks later, the oil business started, because Unocal wanted that pipeline out of the Caspian Sea Basin across Afghanistan down to a warm water port in Pakistan. And the Bush administration called up the Taliban and told them, and it's been verified, this isn't made up stuff, told them, and this is the quote, we will give you a carpet of gold or a carpet of bombs.
You choose. Yeah.
You know, because, of course, they were dealing with people of the Muslim faith, so naturally they had to go to the carpet analogy. Dumb bastards.
Well,
hey, Richard, I hate to do it, but I do have to roll along because we still got a bunch of blinkers that may actually still be callers.
Yes, okay.
All right, you have a great weekend. We'll talk soon.
You too.
Bye
right.
now.
Bye.
Richard calling from Northern California, always a joy. Onward we go. I hope you guys are still there, but you're not. Okay, let's try you. No, you quit too. And so did you. Someday. You know, they need to work up the technology with that thing. Some little light, there's still a human being there. Because I can't sit there and drive the phone while I'm doing a con. That's just not fair. So it's about 25 minutes past 8, and yeah, I'm getting on the big bird tomorrow. And I do it with some trepidation. I think that comes from a song lyric, doesn't it? Yeah, wait a minute. Hang on. Now my curiosity. Yeah, hang on. Wait a minute. I think it does. Going with some trepidation. See how this stuff gets fixed in an old DJ's head?
Somebody's trying to make me stay, you know I've got
Atlanta. AM radio edit. Song also has the added distinction of being one of those classically misquoted song lyrics. I forget, maybe it was the early comedy of Tim Allen where he said, "I hate people who get the lyrics of songs wrong." He said, "We were going down the road one day and song came on. Guy in the back seat was just singing his heart out. Bingo, Jed had a light on." But I'm guilty of it, too, for years. And I cite as an excuse the fact that she mumbles so much. But for years, I thought Stevie Nicks was singing just like a one-winged dove. Goes, ooh, ooh, ooh. And I'm thinking, well, if I was a one-winged dove, I'd go, ooh, 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 too, because it'd have to hurt. Turns out it was a white-winged dove. Oh, well. But no, I'm blowing out of here insanely early in the morning. And then the ride back is going to be a real bear. I'll be wandering around hanging out with the Hare Krishnas in some airport in Moose Jaw or something, waiting for a connecting flight. But, you know, I'm sorry there won't be a show on Monday, but there won't. Let's see. I want to share this with you. First of all, I love it when I get emails letting me know that you guys get stuff or that it works or you got a giggle or a grin or it meant something. And Jude just wrote in and said, "The manner in which you presented the Daffy Duck principles relative to the libertarians, honestly, Bob, was an audio and, for me, a visual delight. Memories of those cartoons will always live on. I also think you nailed the entire consciousness of what this anti-democratic group is about. Remember in college when it was required to take a class in speech? Oh, yes, I had many of them. I chose to do a presentation of Norman Cousin and his viewpoint of the importance of the therapeutic advantages of humor. What actually occurs on a physiological level is remarkably healing and renewing to the entire systems of the body. It also adds a level of clarity that is instantly understood by a far greater group of individuals, as the human act of laughing is an opening to the inner self. It frees us up." Jude says, "As we who have a sense of humor know, no matter what message is needed to be delivered, it can be most effective, and sometimes it delivers and nails the message in the best of ways. That's what you did tonight." Jude says, "Be well and my best to all." And that means all of you, not all of me, because I'm all here. And see, it's going to be fun because I've got 50. Now, while it's going to take me the better part of two-thirds of the day to get home from Utah, getting out there, I've got exactly 50 minutes to sprint my cumbersome butt through Hartsfield International Airport to catch my connecting flight to Salt Lake City.
and just pray that my bag that cost me $23 to send follows me. Yeesh. Jeebus. Before I do go back to the phones, I want to share something with you that Jude sent along earlier today that is important to take note of, simply because these things matter, and it's an opportunity for you and for me and for all of us to engage in a little bit of activism. An attorney named James Branham out in the Northwest has posted a request at a website called Courage to Resist, couragetoresist.org. And James Branham writes of his pro bono client, specialist Nicole Mitchell. He says, I'm writing on behalf of a pro bono client of mine, specialist Nicole Mitchell. Specialist Mitchell was sentenced to 30 days in jail today in a summary court-martial proceeding at Joint Base Lewis-McChord for the offense of AWOL. But this is not your typical AWOL case. It began some time ago. Specialist Mitchell was an MP in the U.S. Army. She served well until she went on a deployment to Iraq, where she began to have serious issues of conscience. After significant reflection and inner turmoil, she applied for CO, conscientious objector, status. The coming months were hard in that she faced significant harassment for applying, but she prevailed. However, she was granted a 1AO, conscientious objector status, and that meant that she would continue to serve in the military, but in a non-combatant status. And attorney, lawyer, I prefer the word lawyer to attorney, lawyer James Branham writes, living as a conscientious objector in the U.S. Army proved to be nearly impossible. Specialist Mitchell was not assigned to a new MOS, military occupational specialty, but instead remained as an MP. Can you imagine being a conscientious objector and still being an MP? I can't. She no longer carried a weapon, but otherwise had to function as an MP, so when personal problems arose in her life, something that happens to many soldiers, the emotional strain and stress became too much, and she went AWOL. Upon return to her unit, Specialist Mitchell did her best to be a good soldier. In many cases, combat veterans who go AWOL and return voluntarily are not prosecuted. But this didn't happen to Specialist Mitchell. Her command rejected our request for her to be given a Chapter 10 discharge in lieu of court-martial, and instead she was given a summary court-martial. She was, in a word, punished for her conscience, for her act of conscience. Lawyer James Branham says, how you can help Specialist Mitchell get an early release from the stockade. Over the next few days, I will be preparing an 1105 clemency application for Specialist Mitchell. In this clemency application, I will be asking the convening authority, a high-level officer in her command chain, to suspend the remainder of Nicole's sentence. As part of this 1105 clemency application, we are asking supporters and friends of Nicole Mitchell to write letters urging the convening authority to act on Nicole's behalf. Lawyer Branham says, here's a sample of what a supporting letter could look like, but please reword it as you see fit so it will be in your own words. To whom it may concern, I'm writing on behalf of Specialist Nicole Mitchell, who was sentenced to 30 days in jail on May 19, 2010, for the offense of AWOL. I understand that you have the power to suspend the remainder of her sentence. I would ask you to do this because, one, character, Specialist Mitchell took the courageous step of applying for conscientious objector status while in Iraq. She suffered harassment and derision for doing this, but she held her ground. And after receiving CO status, she did her best to do her duties within the boundaries of her conscience and the regulations for as long as she was able to. Fairness. Most soldiers who go AWOL do not receive jail time, but rather are either given non-judicial punishment or are chaptered out of the Army. 3. Rehabilitation. Specialist Mitchell is a gifted musician who will do her best to make the world a better place. The sooner she is released from the prison, the sooner she can be about her life's work. Sign it with your name and your contact info. Now, time is pressing in this, so it is important that if you're going to help Specialist Mitchell, you do so as quickly as possible. The best way to do this is to put your letter requesting relief for Specialist Mitchell into an email. Send it to her lawyer, who is Mr. Branum, B-R-A-N-U-M, B-R-A-N-U-M. And they've got to be received no later than Sunday, May 23rd. You don't have any time to dawdle over this. If you want to do it by email, send it to G-I, the letter G, the letter I, Rights, R-I-G-H-T-S, lawyer, G-I, Rights, lawyer, @gmail.com. And make sure you put Nicole Mitchell, N-I-C-O-L-E, Mitchell, in the subject line. G.I. Rights Lawyer @gmail.com, Nicole Mitchell in the subject line. If you want to see the story about her, go to courageToResist.org and search for Nicole Mitchell. I'm going to write an email. Time is short here, but I've got time to write this email. I respect conscientious objectors immensely. As the signature line on all of my emails that go out now says, a line from Kurt Vonnegut, a normal person functioning well on the upper levels of a prosperous industrialized society can hardly hear his conscience at all. So when one among us does hear her conscience, it is incumbent upon us to be supportive of her. G.I. Rights Lawyer @gmail.com. And about 17 minutes left in the program. Let's go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hello?
Hey, Jim, what's up?
How are you today?
I'm pretty good.
Well, number one, I wish you the best of luck on your flight tomorrow, particularly if you go through Hartsfield.
And I am.
And I think you should try to get the trains to get you from one level to the other.
This vehicle is leaving the station. Please step away from the car, from the doors and to the middle of the vehicle. Those trains?
Yeah, Bob, listen, in just 2 years when I worked in D.C., I had 51 plane tickets, and I would dare say 75% went to Hartsfield, and always it would be from one end of that terminal to the other. But anyway, hope you have a good flight, and also, best of luck to your soldier there. That's going to be definitely an uphill fight.
Well, she's already been convicted, and that seems like an unfair thing to begin with.
Well, that's UCMJ. It's totally different from civil law, as you well know.
Right.
But anyway, going back to the first part of your program, when Susan was talking about the oil spill and what they could have done, my question, like hers, is this. Why in the world did they not go to Woods Hole Oceanographic Laboratory, get Robert Ballard, and get him down there? I mean, they still have submersibles, the Nautil, the Ephemeral, the Kelvish. I mean, if they can manipulate parts of the Titanic, which are 2 miles down, with robotic arms, surely they could have done something.
You really would think so, wouldn't you?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, this was not handled properly. And allowing BP and Transocean and the other people, I think it was Halliburton, or to leave this in their hands, was absolutely criminal. They should have intervened. I mean, this is just as bad as when that Russian submarine, the Kursk, sank, and they wouldn't let anybody help them either until everybody was dead on the sub, you know? Same type of action applies. I mean, they should have immediately intervened and allowed people who had real experience in dealing with things at these depths to have capped this well, or to at least done something to have stopped it. It's slow. Now it's almost too late. And I don't know what's going to happen here, because that stuff is really causing some serious problems.
Oh, it's moving and rolling now. But you wouldn't know it to hear a Republican, Jim.
Pardon me?
You wouldn't know it to hear a Republican. What was it, Sean Hannity out there? Where's, or Britt Hume or one of those freaks? Where's the oil? Where's the oil? I think they're overstating the effect of this. Bunch of liberals.
Oh, I mean, with Sean Hannity, I mean, I understand that he had, as one of his guests of honor last night, of all people, Bernard McGuirt, Ibis's right hand.
Who?
Uh-huh. I mean, that man is so terrible for you to even look at, much less to listen to some of the stuff he has to say.
Oh, whenever I hear that name, McGuirt, I, for some reason or another, my mind goes to Dr. Seuss. He sounds like some hateful Dr. Seuss character. You know, McGuirt the Jerk.
He's just got a lot. That man has a lot of hatred and hostility built up inside of him. And, you know, of course, that's the kind of stuff that these people on Fox News love. That's it exactly. But I'm not sure what their plans are. Have you heard anything else about what they're going to try to do to plug this well or whatever? Are they going to?
No.
I haven't either.
I mean, not since the outhouse failed and they went to the top hat instead.
Well, here's the thing. You know, the chemicals they're using to break this stuff up is just as dangerous as the oil. And according to what Susan said, she was talking about plankton. And remember what the conversation we had about the food chain?
Absolutely.
Well, there it is, and there you have it. And I do believe the president should have been more active in this, and this is one thing that's going to come back to haunt him. I mean, you know, he should have intervened immediately and gotten the U.S. Navy down there and everybody else. I mean, if they can spend as much time as they have on recovering other things like sunken Russian subs trying to get information from them, why can't they have devoted the same amount of effort to have plugged something up that is going to destroy the entire ecosystem of, well, I'm not sure where it's going to end up.
Well, and frankly, there is no logical or cogent answer to that.
No, there isn't. I mean, this is one thing. It's beyond the minds of men because they've been too damn stupid in allowing these people to play around with all these artificial condoms or whatever you want to call them to put over this thing. And I don't know. I mean, that's the reason I said the other day, as far as this is concerned, I could see this coming, and that's the reason I use the term desolationist.
And you know what? That one's got some real staying power, Jim.
Well, I think so. And it's almost too little too late. I mean, the damage that's been done, this stuff is going to be around when your children are adults.
Well, the Exxon Valdez stuff is still around.
Of course it is. And they're pumping all these chemicals and stuff in there, and they don't know what these chemicals are going to do, really.
Not a clue.
The long-term effect of them. And they still want to go out and drill deeper. And they want to do it on the cheap by not having, you know, other nations' regulations apply to their type of deep sea drilling. We skip all these steps and things like that. It's absolutely criminal.
It is. And the question, and there's no real hopeful answer in this, Jim. The question is, will anybody be treated like a criminal out of this?
You know, it's like these corporations are run by people like Tony Soprano.
That's about the size of it.
And the reply of everyone is, and I've heard this most of my life, and I've always hated it, when something terrible happens, well, shit happens. And when somebody says that to me, I almost want to take my fist and ram it right down their throat. Because it doesn't have to happen. If people simply will sit back and think and take the necessary steps of precaution, instead of yielding to their own sense of greed and profit motive.
It is what's depressing and what plays into your desolationist theory, Jim, is the fact that there's no there's no guarantee that people have enough gumption anymore to demand that it be made right. You see what I'm saying?
Well, that's because they're trying to keep this thing under wraps, and people are so blatantly ignorant and stupid, and, you know, they don't really understand, and they don't want to understand the ramifications of what's going on. Like you said, eat, drink, and be merry, for tomorrow we die. Or like Louis Kahn says, you know, the state shall last my reign. I pray moi the deluge. After me the storm. And they just don't give a shit. Pardon my French, but there it is.
Or they, well, and see, you may be familiar somewhere along the way with addiction stuff and so forth. And there's an element of it called magical thinking. And that's what a lot of people are doing, Jim. They're doing magical thinking. And classically, magical thinking is when the addict says, well, you know, I've got all, you know, the world is coming apart, but somehow tomorrow it's going to be better. When there's no, there's no evidence to suggest that it's going to be better. But somehow it'll get better. And that's what a lot of people are doing. Well, you know, maybe this won't kill me. It'll only kill somebody else.
I'm afraid it'll work that way.
But it never does, Jim.
Mm-mm. It doesn't work. It doesn't quite work that way. And history is populated with similar scenarios of people who say, well, you know, as long as it's not bothering me, I don't care. Or, you know, what can I do?
And, you know, the fact of the matter is there's a huge dichotomy here between the Obama administration versus BP. On the one hand, BP has the entire right-wing machine structure out there saying, well, they're trying. Let's assume for a moment, Jim, that President Obama steps in and says, you've tried enough, we're going to do it. If the Obama administration fails, there's no machine out there saying, they're trying, they failed, this is Obama's Katrina moment. They've already done it.
Oh, yeah, but they put a very nice spin on it. But, you know, he has not helped by not taking an active part in this. He should have been more active in this thing when it first started happening. I mean, he has...
More engaged?
Yeah, exactly. He has, you know, I'm sure he has people who advise him about the ramifications of this. And you see more about the Mexican state dinner and the chief of protocol.
Oh, God.
Steps, then you do this. Or Michelle Obama's answer to the little girl in the second grade, well, we're going to have to see about that, this type of thing. And that type of mentality and that type of action that follows said mentality, it does not answer the mail, nor does it do anything but prolong the agony of what's going on down there.
I think you're right. Hey, Jim, I got to roll along. We're running out of time, but I thank you for your thoughts.
Well, bon voyage.
I hope. Take care.
Okay.
Bye now, Jim. And onward we go. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, this is Marty. How you doing?
Hey, Marty, what's up, man?
Aside from your reticence for about getting onto a metal tube with that isn't as big as a 737.
And flying through a line of storms in the Midwest. Did I mention storms in the Midwest?
Yes, and those kind of aircraft worry me about those, which is why I won't fly on one that size. One thing I wanted to point out was, one, Dr. Ballard is no longer with Woods Hole. He's with URI.
Okay, well, that helps.
I don't know if that makes me easier or harder to get a hold of or whatever's going on. But I wanted to go back and and do two things. One, we keep talking about the response of the administration to this, and I agree it's not been very good. But could you imagine had they stepped in right away and said, "Oh, who was it appointed to that? I think someone on Shannon Moore's show, you know, before yours had said it." If the administration gets right in there and takes over right away, what that just does is that further inoculates BP, because if anything the government tries to do, you get the teabagger saying, "See, government can't do anything."
Exactly.
They should have let BP.
Well, this is what happens when you don't let the private sector solve the problem.
Exactly. Yeah. It's a damned if you do, damned if you don't situation. So while I agree they should have done more, you know, but, you know, they, you know, hopefully, and I know there's probably people in the chat room laughing when I say this, hopefully there will be hell to pay for BP and these other companies.
Well, there is that old saying, Marty, about, you know, hope in one hand and in the other and see which one fills up first.
Yes, agreed.
I mean, I'm not trying to be a nattering nabob of negativity, but, you know.
Oh, no. I've got enough cynicism for both of us. The one thing I did, one more thing before you run out of time. There was about the Kursk. Someone mentioned the Kursk.
Yeah, Jim.
There was a film about called Kursk, A Ship Through Troubled Waters. And I only tripped on it through either Sundance or IFC. I think it was Sundance. And it's findable on Google Video. They showed a sign. I mean, did you know that the people, the salvagers of the Kursk, was actually a division of Halliburton?
No. Oh.
And one of the things. And, you know, I kept wondering, well, why aren't they getting the DSRV out there to get the people, the crewmen off that sub? And, you know, there was a huge rigmarole about whether or not our Navy had actually shot the Kursk. And they showed an angle of the Kursk, because part of it was that they cut off, you know, they cut off the forward portion where the torpedoes are, but they didn't do it perfectly, and you could see a little partial circle in the hull of the Kursk, big enough for, you know, for a Mark, what, 48 torpedo. I think we shot a torpedo through the Kursk, and which set off the explosives in the torpedo room.
Which kind of plays into the a lot of the principles for Tom Clancy's first blockbuster, you know, Red October.
Red October.
Yeah. Hey, Marty, I hate to do it, but I got to roll, brother.
No worries, man. And clear skies and a gentle landing to you.
Thank you very kindly. I'll take all the hope I can get in this case. See you, Marty.
All right, take care.
Bye now. And, well, it happened again. 20 minutes to go in the show. 6 blinking lights. Sorry. But time is out. I'll miss you guys Monday. If you're the praying type, say a little happy prayer for the guy who's making slightly less than the manager at your Taco Bell, who will be flying my plane from Charleston to Atlanta tomorrow. Otherwise, just think good thoughts. A gentle reminder, we did make it to halfway through May's fundraising goal, and we made it through last Friday. After that, not so much. So we're three fourths of the way through May and halfway past our fundraising goal. I hate to even mention it, but I guess I got it. You know, one of these days when we go to video, I've already thought about it. I'm going to get myself a big platinum wig, and I'm going to do the fundraising pitches. Jan Crouch, or maybe I'll gas my hair back in a DA and do them as Jimmy Swaggart or something, to at least make them marginally entertaining. But there's a PayPal button at headonradionetwork.com, and a snail mail address too. Over the weekend we certainly could use your help getting to the three quarters of the way mark in our fundraising for the month. and for everybody who does help, and you do help so much, thank you. And those of you who can, those of you who do contribute, understand, you're making the horn possible, not just for yourselves, but for those who cannot. So thank you very much. I wish you all a very happy weekend. Maybe I'll try to post on Facebook over the weekend just to let you know that I haven't gone Mormon or anything. And I'll be back Tuesday evening at the regular time. So have a wonderful evening. Thanks to everybody who makes all of this happen, from John Fox to Ben Birch, the hardest working man in liberal talk, who saved talk radio on the Internet starting in 2002 with WhiteRoseSociety.org, to Peter Godbold, our IT professional. Thanks to our chat room moderator, Lottie. Thanks to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan. To our blogger, Texas Betsy. To our Southeast correspondent, Matt Osborne, osborneinc.com, osborneinc.com, who tells me he's already hard at work on the horn's next video. I'm told the working title is Atlas Duct. How can that not just be a scream? Matt is still trying to get to Netroots Nation. He still needs scholarship votes. The sticky is still at his site, osborneinc.com, osborneinc.com. If you have not voted for Matt, please do so. If you have friends who might vote for Matt, please do so. He is 81 votes away from outright third place right now in the second round of voting. And third place gets him the ticket to Netroots Nation in Vegas this July. Can we scrounge up in a short period of time, a very short period of time, can we scrounge up 100 votes to get him that ticket to Netroots Nation, that scholarship? I sure hope so. Of course, my head writer is David in Tennessee, and I appreciate all of his thoughts, all of his participation in this, and his kind hosting of me while I was down that way for the Music Saves Mountains concert, which I still have to tell you about, and will on Tuesday. Thanks, of course, always go out to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, and coalriverwind.org. When you see thugs like Don Blankenship testifying before the Senate, understand that Coal River Mountain Watch has been the last bastion of defense against the predatory nature of Don Blankenship for a lot of years now, and they do it at considerable threat to themselves. That's why they're the hardest working, bravest people I know. Have a great weekend, everybody. Rick Smith will come your way tomorrow and Sunday. As I told you, Cynthia Black has gone on hiatus until she gets her migraines attended to. No Foxed Up this Sunday, because John's still trying to juggle his schedule and figure out how all that works out as well. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you.
Go.
Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Dog, I'm back home, I'm back in the studio, and gosh, it would be nice if I didn't think it was Tuesday or something, but darned if it isn't Friday already. But that's okay, because that means it's Friday on the front porch, on the horn, and I am, well, I got 3 days worth of show all bottled up inside of me to do in one evening. Actually, 4 days worth of show, because I won't be here Monday either. God, I remember when Johnny Carson used to make jokes about Mayor Yawkey never being in L.A. Yeah, I'm dating myself. I can say in my own defense that I heard those jokes because I was allowed to stay up late. I'm not as old as I think I am or seem. And in my heart, I'm 4 and a half. But anyway, no, I'm back. And tomorrow I'm gone again. This would be the program note part of the program. I'm gone again tomorrow. I'm flying out to Salt Lake City to do some missionary work. Talk about mountaintop removal a little bit up at one of the nearby nearby hotels. There's a big meeting about waterways and rivers and streams and so forth. And I have the honor, the distinct and signal honor, of being on a panel to discuss mountaintop removal's impacts on streams and waterways and, yes, in fact, rivers. So it's fly out tomorrow, cringing and shaking. Land in the land of Mormons. I'm under strict orders from Agnes to bring her back some magic underwear. But I think I'd get caught in the gift shop as soon as I mispronounced Kolob or did, you know, or ask them about the angel Nehi. Oh, that's Nephi. See? See the problem? But anyway, no. So I'm out tomorrow. The conference, actually, it's going on right now. But I'll be there for tomorrow, or get there tomorrow. Be there for the conference and panel on Sunday. And then I'm flying back on Monday. And that is going to be a milk run. I'm flying back Monday, and I think I get in somewhere around midnight at Charleston on a five-hour flight from Salt Lake City.
A five-hour flight.
Somebody, yeah. So I will not have a show on Monday, but the rest of the week should be as near to normal as anything on the horn can ever get. Normal, you will recall, as we were informed by the once and future world's greatest LGBT conversation radio host, Peter Godbold, is merely a setting on a dryer. So that's where we find ourselves this evening, with 3 hours and too much stuff to cram into all of it. And where to begin? How do I not begin here? Come on.